all of you as you are here from this department side, as well as honorable members of parliament, as well as ladies and gentlemen who are just here. And without wasting any time, I want you to keep this matter for this matter for to say we have requested the human segment today to come and give us a briefing so that we can on the budget vote, so that we can prepare ourselves, because we are about to debate it. Because what is very much important, I'd like to highlight it. I didn't say that similar thing happened. Time again, I wanted to remind people once more that sometimes people are making mistakes when they treat us. In Parliament, we are having two houses. It's National Council of Provinces as well as National Assembly. Both houses are equally the same. There is no senior house, there is no minor house, but some departments are making a serious mistake by try or attempt to undermine us as this house. I believe and I hope that this thing or that thing won't happen. Why I'm saying that, most of the time we know the procedures and the rules that in particular with budget vote and strike plan, we don't compromise. We expect executive to come and brief us, which is the minister, alternatively deputy minister, or else they deploy a DG. Less than that, no. The answer is big N-O, no. And we won't compromise on that one, in that regard. And it's advisable that we better be informed in time that there will be this and this arrangement, because even ourselves, we are very flexible, because we know that when that is very busy in Parliament, and was part of it towards the issue of 2010 and other things, there are a lot of activities and everything is compressed into one. By saying that, it was in a lighter note, I will propose that members to start to introduce themselves. I'll start with you, honorable member.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Derek Feldman. I'm a member of the committee representing Gauteng.
Good morning, I'm Aaron Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and a member of this committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Roland Lennon, member of the Select Committee on the Council Field, representing the province of the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, my name is O'Neill De Beer. I'm from the Western Cape, a member of this committee.
My name is Patrick Sibande, but I prefer the M1 in Patrick Sibande. I'm the chairperson of this committee. I'm from Mpumalanga province. Without wasting any time, I'll leave it to the department to introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chair, members of the Select Committee. I would like to thank you, Chair, for the committee for the invitation to the department with regard to also would like to make an apology, to request, to make a question. My name is Zwanga Shabantu. I'm the acting director general. I am present chair in person. However, I am suffering from a long flu that has not been leaving me, which causes me to cough terribly. In that regard, I request the committee's permission to request a senior member of my department to do the actual presentation. I will be present to have to enter the discussions subsequent to the presentation in person. Just to avoid situation where I have to cough too much at the particular stage while I'm doing the presentation, if the committee permits. I will ask the members of my team to quickly introduce themselves, and with your permission, Chair, we can commence with the discussion.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Julie Byatt, and I'm a chief director in the department, and I'm in charge of the National Priority Project. Thank you.
Morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Mara Sici. I'm a director within the Department of Human Settlements and Budget Management.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Fanani Madrasi, the Chief Director of Fund Management in the Department of Human Settlements. Thank you.
Morning, everybody. My name is Mili Lekhaba, Assistant to the Director General.
Thank you. I'll request also, same applies to PNG, to introduce myself.
Good morning. My name is Quinton Kayles. I'm here on behalf of PNG.
The staff to introduce itself. Zorali Masbonge, I'm from Connecticut. Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we've all of us have we introduced ourselves. I think the issues which were raised by the acting DG, I think we must take it, because no matter he's not feeling well, but he refused to himself to come before to the committee. We do appreciate that. Unlike other people, we don't just come, we don't do anything, it's just to, you know, appoint other people to come on their behalf. But your presence to us means a lot. And also your team, the presence of your team is also a lot, because we can see that it's part of the highest dedication from the team. Without wasting any time, we'll give you the opportunity to take us apart. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, TG. Chairperson, honorable members. The presentation today is based largely on the letter, Chair, that arrived in the department from yourself, and we will then, based on the letter, we have actually made a presentation, and we certainly hope that it's going to be informative and it's going to assist the committee. Chair, it's also a very long presentation, and the document, there are copies that have been circulated, so there will be parts that I'm going to just go very quickly through, and for the details, you will find that in the presentation. We can just start quickly with what the aim of the department is, and to determine, to finance, to promote, to coordinate, to communicate, as well as monitor the policies in respect of the housing and human settlements. As far as the settlement conditions are concerned, Chair, I think we need to just talk a little bit about this. We need to just understand where is this that the human settlement issues are coming from, and we want to just talk about, first of all, the context of the human settlement. We talk about the fact that our mandate and the work that we do largely arises as a result of the informal settlement growth, the lack of basic services in the country, in parts of the country where we need to deliver human settlement. There is an unbalanced property market, and there are unsustainable development choices. Now, the context within which we work is very important, because there's rapid urbanization, the cities are growing very rapidly, and there's a huge amount of migration from the rural to the urban areas. Population growth is a big issue that we need to consider as far as our policy development and our delivery of human settlement is concerned. And household formations are changing. And we're finding that our need for housing or the background for housing is increasing, primarily because the household formations are actually finding that there are more households and the size of the households are actually diminishing. So that is the context within which our policies are actually undertaken. In terms of our settlement categorization, just to inform the committee, we work on the basis that there are formal settlements, there are informal settlements, there are settlements on tribal and communal land, and settlements on farms. So as far as the formal settlements are concerned, very quickly, a little bit as far as that goes, these are proclaimed townships, and they're deferred tenure. They are generally formal houses, these are surveyed and taken, and of course they get access to one or more formal basic services. Whereas compared to the informal settlements, the problem is that these informal settlements are generally on unproclaimed land, and there's no secure tenure. On inhabitable ground, the land is not surveyed, and generally this is unserved. So this is a context within which the department works in order to ensure that, or to try to deliver, on the mandate of human settlement. Chair, as far as basic services are concerned, we also need to indicate to the committee that there are issues as far as settlements are concerned, as far as basic services are concerned. Household access to water is a problem because there's a remaining need of 3.95 million households. So we've got a long way to go before we can actually provide access to water. Access to sanitation is also problematic. There's a need, the current need is 3.2 million households, and that's a huge amount that we need to provide, sanitation needs to be provided. Similarly, with electricity, there's a need of another 2.6 million households need electricity. And as for refuse removal, which should take place once a week, 4.56 million households remain unserved. So this is the context within which our human settlements mandate revolves. Also, Chair, we just want to talk very briefly about the trends of urbanization and demographics. And we also need to take into account the dual residence concept of some households. And in this instance, we also know that there are many families and heads of household that maintain a rural base during the sojourn while they get to the urban areas to work. And this is a phenomenon that is very, very, it's prevalent in our South African society, and it happens. There's migration to urban, to rural areas. This too is increasing, and importantly, it is becoming a permanent phenomenon. We also take into account that urbanization is irreversible and is growing, so in planning for the future, we need to ensure that services are in place, that urbanization is considered in our human settlement mandate. Urban consolidation has been happening since the 1960s, and also informal settlement residents are very, very largely addressed this. It is a big problem for us, and of course, this causes the exclusion of residents in the human settlement arena. So we find that informal settlements, people living in informal settlements are hugely disadvantaged. Importantly also, Chair, we need to take into account what we call a shifting target, because the delivery of services is hugely problematic in view of the trends that we need to take into account. Let's look very briefly, Chair, at the macro conditions that impact on human settlement, and we've briefly touched on these. There is rapid urbanization and migration to cities. It impacts largely. There's structural unemployment and informality as far as the housing is concerned. There is an economic downturn, and this very impacts on the diminishing access to housing credit. There are more households that are falling into the subsidy band. And with the loss of jobs, we find that there are more people who require to be who fall into the subsidized sector. Bulk infrastructure is not sufficient. They are diminishing bulk infrastructure. In some instances, the bulk infrastructure is aging. And as we need to build more and more settlements, the bulk infrastructure provisions are insufficient. the Apostolic Chief, as far as the social and geographical segments are concerned. There's inadequate funds to build in terms of our mandate. The inadequate construction materials capacity is also limited. There are issues surrounding the built environment governance and institutional arrangements. And then, of course, in terms of sustainability, we need to consider it in terms of climate change and the related issues. Chair, we want to just go through basically what the pillars of the Human Settlement Development Strategy is. And in order to develop the Human Settlement Strategy, we have this is underpinned by six pillars. And very briefly, we've got the statement of the outcomes of the first pillar. The second pillar in terms of the development of the strategy is macro coordination and alignment. The third pillar that we need to consider is urbanization spatial management. Then there are certain key priorities. There's transformation, and then there's institutional realignment for the implementation. So this is very broadly where we need to consider how is it that we as a department will develop a strategy in order to ensure that we build human settlements. If we look very briefly at the first one, the statement of the outcomes or the expectation, we consider what the prevailing reality is. And this is what I was talking about earlier, the problems that we have, the number of people, the urban to rural migration, all of those kinds of issues, that's the prevailing reality. We then have to consider that within the mandate of the manifesto, of SONA, and in terms of budget speeches. We need to consider what is it that our political principles are saying to us, what our mandate is, and we have to deliver in terms of that. And then, of course, very importantly, we have to look at consideration of sustainability. As far as this, the macro coordination alignment are issues we need to bring together in order to ensure that the strategy is coordinated and it is aligned. We need to look at urbanization. We need to look at how we manage the space, the area, the spatial management. We need to look at the key priorities like the residential development, governance issues, shelter development. We need to look into the long term. How is it that we are going to ensure that we provide human settlements going into the long term? As far as transformation is concerned, there's a shift in the pattern that we have to exercise, and we need to ensure that there's realignment of the institutional structure to allow for the mandate going forward. Chair, let us just look at our service delivery priorities that we need to consider going into 2014, and it's what we need to do to ensure that our processes and our strategy is going to accommodate us and take us into the next into the HEF. First of all, we need and this service delivery priority, Chair, comes from as far as the first one is concerned, accelerating the upgrading of informal settlements. In his State of the Nation address, our state president actually said that we needed to upgrade well-located informal settlements and we need to provide proper services and remove people from informal settlements, and the number that was given to us was 500,000. So that comes directly from our state president's speech, and it is one of our priorities that we have indicated. The second priority, Chair, is the question of upscaling the development of affordable rental housing. It plays a very important part as far as our delivery focus is concerned going forward, and the objective here is to increase the rate of affordable rental housing delivery of at least 20,000 units per year. So the affordable sector is a sector beyond the fully subsidized sector. This is for those households that earn up between 3,501 going up to about 7,000 overall. That is where we are at this stage. Chair, as far as the Land Assembly for Human Settlements is concerned, also a very important priority, and the objective is to set aside 6,250 hectares of well-located public land for low-income and affordable housing. This has to be appropriate land. It has to be land that can be used for housing purposes, that is going to ensure that people can take advantage of the infrastructure within the urban core. And this, Chair, in red we have it at the bottom, is subject to delivery agreements between the provinces and all, and so that there is going to be a coordinated approach in order that delivery can occur. Importantly also is the National Settlement Infrastructure Development, and here we need to accelerate the provision and upgrade infrastructure networks by 2014. Importantly, also, we need to facilitate the increase of affordable housing. And in this instance, Chair, we need to accommodate those people whose salaries are too high to get government subsidies, but who earn too little to qualify for a normal bank loan. These people have been in that niche where they just were unable to receive bank loans, and it is our objective and one of the important mandates for us to ensure that we get this process underway. If we can quickly just look at some of the processes that have actually been put underway in order to assist us to meet with those objectives. First of all, let us look at the Human Settlement and Basic Services Delivery Forum. This is a forum that is convened by the DG of the department. The members, as the chair, consists of all the across the board, the sectors that we need to assist us in the delivery of human settlements. Human settlements is not just about housing, it's about ensuring that there are services, there's infrastructure, there's finance, there's land. All of these issues impact on whether we can deliver on human settlements. The supporting members will include all the other sector departments that assist us to deliver as far as education, health, all the other issues are concerned. And then, of course, we've got partner entities that will assist us to ensure that we start to bring all the components together in order that we deliver on our mandate. Mirroring the national delivery forum chair, there are provincial human settlement forums, and the convener in the province will be the HOD of the province. And as you can see, the core members, the supporting members, and the public entities are the same, and they will mirror the national department's delivery forum. And the idea is to ensure that each one of these units work together to assist us to facilitate the delivery of human settlements. Chair, if we can quickly go on to the progress analysis to assist us to answer the part of the question that was raised in your letter. First of all, we indicate to the committee that there has been a transfer of sanitation unit from the previous Department of Water Affairs and Forestry that has been finalized. As far as the office space to accommodate the unit, that has actually been also been underway, and all the operational resources and all the support services in this regard have been put into place. The National Housing Code of 2009 was published in February of this year, and it has already been disseminated to all the provinces, the municipalities, and the other stakeholders. Included in this code chair is the new assistance program for farm residents, and that's a very important aspect of this. As far as policy development processes were concerned, we need to indicate to you, Chair, that there have been some delays, but this needed to happen because consultations and intergovernmental cooperation was required. As far as the conceptual document on the implications of the name change from housing to human settlements, that has been finalized. And in Java, the alternative building technology is currently being arranged, Chair, and I think that will be very interesting in Java. The department has completed the beneficiary occupancy audit that was initiated during the year in 7 of the 9 provinces. And the department also undertook 3 impact evaluation studies to determine the impact of various programs on the lives of beneficiaries, and the program included the rural housing program, social and rental housing program, as well as the upgrading of informal settlements. Chair, the department has also proceeded with project level monitoring processes, and this was to verify and confirm delivery, as was reported by the provinces. This is a very important element. This is to ensure that what the provinces are telling us is true, so that has that monitoring process, a very important process, and that has actually happened. The department also initiated the process to develop a human settlement index for South Africa, and this was in collaboration with UN Habitat. The department also entered into engagements with different stakeholders, and there are agreements with Platinum Mines for the possible rollout project in the Pulpa Northwest, with InterSite for joint development of land in and around railway stations. in different sectors together to assist us in order that we deliver on the mandate. So these delivery agreements play a crucial role in our work. The department also negotiates the signing of the agreement with the Department of Public Works, and this allows our Department of Human Settlements the first right of refusal on any land that may be considered for disposal or for disposal by public works. Chair, conceptual document on the implication of the as far as the National Upgrading Support Program has that has been established and will in future provide support to municipalities insofar as in situ upgrading of informal settlements is concerned. This is an important program because it actually assists municipalities in the upgrading of human settlements. A project process guide has been developed to do, first of all, to guide the implementers of projects in the housing process and also to serve as a project management and monitoring tool for project managers. Chair, the HDA has actually been established following the promulgation of the HDA Act, and the HDA has been in operation since during the course of the 2009-10 financial year. Chair, also the department, in collaboration with the Rural Housing Loan Fund, has finalized the development of the Individual Housing Subsidy Voucher Scheme for those people who have functional tenure rights on the land that they live in. The chair also, the department has also ensured that operational systems are aligned with the changes in housing policy, and the department has also implemented the change requests received from the 9 provincial departments. The department also has developed a model, a generic business processes model that is based on documentary housing delivery processes. This has actually been implemented. The municipal accreditation compliance and capacitation assessment panel has been put into place, Chair, and this panel has been of really great assistance to the department, and it has, first of all, completed level 1 and 2 assessments of all 6 metros and 4 local municipalities, and 5 municipalities are accredited to level 1. As far as the international arena is concerned, Chair, South Africa has been given a voice on the debate on human settlements, and as far as the African Ministerial Conference on Housing and Urban Development is concerned, and as well as far as the World Urban Forum is concerned. Chair, there has been a problem with inadequate resources in the department, but the department has not been able to fill all its vacant posts, but some posts are being filled on a priority basis, and the filling of these posts will be done gradually as funding is available, such that the new structure will be fully operational. We are hoping that this will be done during the 2010-11 financial year. Chair, what we're going to go into now, and because there's a lot of detail, I'm going to, this is a department total per program. It's all the programs in the department together with what the expenditure has been up until for the 9-10 financial year, the adjusted allocation, the variance, and the amount that's been spent. So, Chair, as you can see, there are 5 programs in the department. The preliminary expenditure is indicated as 13.3 billion. The adjusted allocation is 13.6. There's a variance of 236. And then there's a 98%. That has been spent. Chair, the departmental total for economic classification, essentially all we have all the figures in there. They actually, if you look at it, and I'm not going to go into there, it's by classification, expenditure, again, the adjusted allocation, the various things they spend, and the totals are there, and they're clear in your presentation, Chair. As far as the grant is concerned, Chair, as far as what has been allocated to the provinces, it's the provinces are indicated on the first column, there's the voted amount that was there, voted to them. They are preliminary figures from 1st of April to 31st of March. plus 9% of the funds have actually been spent, Chair. As far as departmental agencies are concerned, these are the agencies that the department needs to actually work with. Their preliminary expenditures also indicated, together with their budget, as well as the millions and the percentages that have been spent. Chair, we can go now into the strategic goals, the objectives, and the plan outputs per program. I will just indicate what the programs are. Program one is administration, and the purpose is to provide strategic leadership and administrative and management support services to the department. Program two is housing policy, research and monitoring, and the purpose of this program is to develop and promote human settlement and housing policies supported by a responsive research agenda, to monitor and assess implementation performance and impact of national housing policies and programs. Program three is housing planning and delivery support. This program supports implementation and delivery, builds capacity, and liaises and communicates with stakeholders for effective housing and human settlement programs. It also coordinates and monitors the implementation of priority projects and the sanitation program. Program four, Chair, is the Housing Development Finance Program, and the purpose of this program is to fund housing and human settlement development programs. It provides financial and grant management services. It promotes investment in housing finance. It mobilizes and promotes financial poverty within housing institutions, and it manages all matters provided for by the Home and Mortgage and Disclosure Act. As far as strategic relations and government is concerned, and program five, and the purpose of this program is to coordinate the department's mandate within the Intergovernmental Relations Framework, to manage international relations and promote good governance practices within the department and public entities, and to provide timely and integrated business information to the department. Chair, this is now the allocation per program. So we've got all five programs in the first column, Chair. What the adjusted appropriations were for the 9-10, this is, and then we have going into the end year exactly what the estimates are. Chair, the same with the allocation by economic classification, and we actually indicate you what the compensation for employees are, goods and services, transfer subsidies, and payment of capital assets, together with the 9-10 adjusted appropriation, as well as going into the NGEF, what it is. What the estimates are. Chair, what we do here in the next few slides is going to all the detail of what each one of the programs are doing, and I could skip through this instead of going into the kind of detail. Essentially, we've spoken about the program one, what the strategic goal was, and that was to provide these strategic leadership, administrative and management support services to the department. This unit essentially supports the Office of the DG. Internal audit, risk management, and special investigations are also contained within this unit, Chair. HR, as is HR management, corporate services, information technology, and legal services. They're all within Program 1. This is what Program 1 is about. This is the adjusted appropriation for 9-10, and as well as the estimates going into the NTEF. Chair, if I need to go a bit slow on this, please advise me, but it's the detail is in there. Also, the further details, Chair, as far as the breakdown is concerned, with the compensation for employees, etc., all the issues are in, so I'm not going to go into that. The second program is about housing policy, research and monitoring. We did say that it was about the development, promotion, monitoring, evaluation of sustainable human settlement, etc. Within this branch, Chair, we have policy, we have research, we have monitoring evaluation, and each one of these starts with these are the units that are resident within that particular program. As far as the funding elements for this program are concerned, Chair, it's contained in the notes as well. All those funding issues are in together with the appropriation and the estimates. Chair, Program 3 is the Delivery Support Program. This is about the implementation delivery support, building capacity, liaising, communicating, sta- about what each one of the units are doing in their programs. Chair, this is the financial component of the program, exactly what the appropriation is and what the estimates are in going into the ETF. As far as program 4 is concerned, Chair, this is about housing development finance. This is about the provision and the administration of funding for the development of sustainable human settlement program and the creation of an enabling environment for access to affordable finance. Chair, essentially, the units contained in this program are financial services, fund management, and housing equity, and they provide financial services, for example, provide financial administration, supply chain management services. Fund management provides overall budgetary and supply chain services. Chair, this is the unit in the department that actually manages huge grants for the provinces and there's housing equity, which promotes investment in sustainable city settlements and administers the SAPTA Act. And this is the financial section as far as the housing development finance unit is concerned, Chair, with the appropriation as well as the estimates. And a further breakdown for the other elements. Funds and how they're utilized. Chair, if we can then go on to what slide 58, which talks about housing delivery opportunities. Chair, this starts to look at on slide 58. Since there are two slides per page, probably beyond what, 29. Chair, what we're looking at here, 28, if we look at the first column, this starts to talk to the provinces, CTK, free states, etc. The second column starts to look at the preliminary delivery, the number of units delivered, and these are preliminary figures for the 9-10 financial year. So we're looking at around 219,899. So that's almost 220,000 units that were delivered in the 19 financial year. Chair, our estimated delivery going forward from 2011 up to 2014 is, as you can see, the figures that we started to look at. Chair, we must also indicate to you that we undertook an extremely intensive exercise with the provinces in order that we can start to meet the target that was set for us in terms of the state president's state of the nation address. We tried to reconcile and to align all the targets for our national targets with what the provinces are going to deliver for us. And as you can see, it's actually reflected really clearly, and it's really not too far out of line of what it is that we are saying that we are already delivering, and we're delivering in the region of about 20 at the moment, and this is what our housing targets are about. Sorry, Chair, on slide 61. Thank you. Chair, in terms of the index of allocations are concerned, if we look at the next slide, we actually have the allocations going forward from 2010-11 up to 2013-14. In this financial year, we're looking at 15 billion rand allocation. And going forward, you can see that it starts to increase. And by 2013-14, we're going to be looking at an allocation, we think, of around 19 billion, which is very, very substantial in terms of housing term. But it would be great if we could get more. Chair, as far as the strategic relations and governance is concerned, Program 5, this is about the strategic goal of that particular program is to coordinate the department's mandate with an intergovernmental relations framework, manage international relations, promote good governance practices within the department and its public entities, and to provide timely and integrated business information information and communication services. So this unit also is actually has had a number of this program has those different units. Chair, the following slide starts to tease out what each and every one of those units do. So I'm not going to go into that if you don't mind, Chair. But let us look at what the adjusted allocation for this program has been for the 9-10 financial year, and that is on slide number 71. And then it starts to look at the estimates going into the NGEF. As we look at the following slide, it starts to do a breakdown check of exactly what part of the utilized for. Chair, what I want to do now is quickly look at some of the challenges that the department has experienced and the manner in which we are responding to it. That too you asked for, and we've included that in this presentation. First of all, one of the big challenges that we have had is a lack of a shared understanding of the comprehensive plan across the provinces, the three provinces, and the national department. There has been a lack of that understanding. And what we have done is that we have actually defined the role of municipalities, we've established the necessary mechanisms for the rollout of the accreditation, we've provided assistance and monitoring support to provinces, and what we don't have here, Chair, is that we have actually, the new housing code has been written in a way in which it starts to, it's a lot more user-friendly than the previous version was. It started to assist with the understanding of what is required in terms of the different programs as set out in the comprehensive plan. The second challenge here was that the comprehensive plan actually expanded the mandate of the department, but it did not give the department the legislative directive to pursue the policy intention. And what we're saying is that the department's jurisdiction did not change, but the delivery expectations of the department have actually changed. And what we've done then in view of that is that there has been a reconfiguration of the department from the Department of Housing to the Department of Human Settlements, and that has started to make it a lot easier for the department to meet with the mandate and require a comprehensive plan. Secondly, we need to, what we're saying is that the reconfiguration of the department actually starts to capture the strategy of the comprehensive plan, and it has now teach to the department in terms of a legislative directive. Another challenge here has been inadequate intergovernmental coordination for accelerated housing delivery. This has been a huge problem previously, but what we have done is that we have started to have talk about coordinating investments amongst the sector departments, critical public and the private role players, as well as the spheres of government. And this is important because what we've been doing previously was that we've actually been building houses. We were building houses and schools were not being built, clinics were not being built, there were no other facilities around, and people were living in these dormitory summers. And it's been very difficult to try. Now what we're doing is in terms, and you saw there at the forum, we're actually bringing all the sector departments together in order that we can start to align and coordinate the kind of work that we're doing. Importantly also is that those delivery agreements that we're talking about, those will be per the current outcome-based approach, and these delivery agreements are designed to enforce cooperation and coordination among all the key role players. The other challenge here has been the lack of capacity to monitor and evaluate the implementation of the housing program. And what we've done in terms of responses, we've directed support to the provinces and the municipalities. We do that as far as the implementation of projects is concerned, and we do it specifically on wherever we find there are problems and where we are approached for that, but more specifically, do it on some of the priority projects that have been identified nationally. These are big projects, and direct support is given to the provinces and the municipalities. Also, support is given to those provinces and municipalities where there are projects, where they are blocked. And Chair, is the creating a functioning housing market that allows low-income households to capitalize on equity provided by the subsidized house while minimizing the distortion of housing that housing subsidies create for households in the other sectors of the market. Chair, what this actually is about is that there is a distortion where a house, a subsidized house, is built on this side of the street, and on that side of the street you have houses that have to be built for people in the affordable sector. So the subsidized house is free. It's 45 square meters, and inside it's really a good house for 45 square meters, and it's free. But on the other side of the house, under Upper Lodge, you have a house that's built by a bank or some private developer that's slightly bigger, but really it's for people who earn just a little more than $3,500 that they've got to pay. So there is a distortion in the market as far as that's concerned. And the way in which I think the department has had to consider in order to try to address this very, very important issue that has come to us, and we need to ensure that we have to address this. Things in order to do that, Chair, we've started to look at the capital grants, and we're saying that these must be limited to the extent where, for example, the institutional subsidy program will now will support the rental housing institutions. As far as the social housing sector is concerned, the Social Housing Foundation has been retained until the regulator, which is the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, until that authority has been established. In order to ensure the supply of rental accommodation, we've increased to accommodate that rural to urban migration. The allocation formula for integrated human settlement grant has been adjusted to allow for that, and then further changes to the allocation mechanisms are being pursued, and this will take into account a whole range of other challenges in provinces and rural municipalities. Chair, in your letter, you actually asked, and you, what is it that the department wants of the committee? And we're actually suggesting, Chair, in order with you and the committee, that your committee reports after your oversight visits to the provinces are shared with the department so that the department can follow up on any issues or problems that you identify during your oversight visits. Chair, we also would appreciate guidance from yourself to the department within the context of what your mandate is, and whatever it is, we'll be very appreciative if you can assist us and if you can provide us with guidance in terms of your own issues that you need to address, and if there's some way in which we can assist you with that, we'll be very happy to come along and do whatever we need to do. And then we also would like to ask you to share the information of concern and that are of importance to the committee. So whatever concerns you may have, and that we'd be very happy to ask you to invite, we actually invite you to invite us to share whatever information you may want us to share with you at any time, and we'd be very happy to be able to do that in order to ensure that that really happens, Chair. Thank you very much.
I think in line with what the Chair said with regard to the work of this committee, while recognizing that we are monitoring a number of stakeholders that you engage in terms of quality, we are eager and willing to take some of the issues with the committee from time to time as advisors so that we can enhance our policy from the leadership.
thank you to the department really to give us this but before we start, I want to go to deep details about our name. We told us already first what is oversight. That is the first one. But allow me, I don't want to dwell much on that one. Some of the things it will come. So I'm going to allow the members to start to ask some of the questions. Honorable members, are you listening? I'd like to give an opportunity to start maybe to ask questions from the department. Are you ready to ask? Let me start from the near Khunabad, Honorable Member Khunabad's camp, followed by the Mr. Jacobs and Mama. In that line, please. Right before. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I've got a lot of questions. Maybe I will not handle everyone, but I'll start. I think the most biggest problems we've had at this stage in South Africa is housing. And that is what makes the people the most angry, as we see what happens all over South Africa from time to time, when people start marching and there's no service delivering all over. And what I want to know is, what is the main reason we've got with illegal settlement? When people just get at a place, as what happened now at this very moment in the Krugersdorp area, there's a lot of people who just get on a piece of land and they start put up their houses and things there. What is the reason for that? And then in the same day, I want to know, are we not doing proper planning around these kinds of things? Because we can see something is going to happen in a certain area. What is the department's planning around that to resolve these problems? And what is the, my next question is, what is the influence on housing regarding foreigners who's coming from Africa or other countries, and they want housing, because we get a lot of times our local people complaining about that the foreigners is getting into certain areas and they get the houses, and our people who staying in South Africa is not getting the houses. So what is the problem there? And then it is true, we've got a migration from our rural areas to the urban areas, but the main problem I've seen, there's no investigation into our rural areas. So we must make a mind shift in this case as well. We must move some of the factories and businesses to our rural areas to keep the people in our rural areas, because there's no jobs for them there, and now they migrate into the urban areas, and that's why we've got a problem in that areas. So if you maybe you, I believe you think about these kinds of problems. And then I want to know if the department have the capacity to deliver these houses. Do you have the capacity? You talk about 500,000 houses in 5 years. Can we build such a lot of houses? We can see you nearby when we get it into from province to province. But the main thing is they build the houses, and in 2-3 years' time, the houses start cracking and it's falling apart. So what kind of measures do we have in place to control, to see if there's quality houses being built in different areas? And then, in the most provinces and towns, we see there's a lot of fraud when houses are being built. What are the departments doing about it? Because the most places where money is paying out and the houses are not completed, it is half built houses stand all over South Africa, and the contractors has just disappeared. What are you doing about that? Chair, I'm really finished.
Okay, that's it.
Can I not just talk about?
Okay, we can ask the last one.
Okay, last one. Thank you. Is there any investment from the department side in training of people so that we can get quality people and who fit for purpose on the jobs? And if you are not doing that, what is the reason for that? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, before I open to other members, this is one of the requests for us was we wanted to ask about food and sample the last question, not then ask something about issue of capacity to operate in the of these houses. Already, in principle, if I indicated that there is a lack of capacity to monitor and evaluate the implementation of housing programs. Why some question, please must listen to attend it to yourself, and once sort of when we ask this question, make sure that we don't do it. Ask the question is not there. Because with this one, we already is being implemented. Let us allow Adam Mas to come for it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I think we need to appreciate this presentation presented here. My question, Chairperson, is the fact that in the different government departments, we are having this intergovernmental relations forum. And history shown that in this intergovernmental relations forum, all the departments come with their own mandate, which they want to prioritize first, which doesn't then serve the purposes of that department has its own intergovernmental structure. We can deal with targets set by the department about the issue of other measurements to have the officials being performed or measured. The critical one for me is that the department set some targets for them in terms of how many houses, how many units, but in the same way, there is the issue of shortage of water, sanitation in the country. So how are you going to be able to put a balance between the two? Because we know the state of our energy in the country is in the crisis. Now we want to also put some pressure on it as a department. So we must have some sort of measurement. I'm not going to speak around the figures, which you already raised to us. The second thing, I think the department is very ambitious by saying that they're going to fill the outstanding positions by 2010-11 or by 2011. And this is a new department because in our department, we find it is very difficult to fill existing vacancies which is budgeted for. So there must be something put in place for this department and this new department to really try and put up structures within the department that we're able to deliver towards its mandate. I'm very glad to hear that on the National Upgrading Support Program, they targeted the informal structures on local government level. Because I think there is where the need is actually. The issue of inflating land is precisely because of the fact that people is in need for land. And on the issue of land, I saw on the presentation, the rail is over 6,000 hectares with looking at. But one of the issues in our country is that there is no land available, is availability of land. Although it's only scattered over all nine provinces, but this is a burning issue, even at local government level. Council will tell you that we don't have land. And so, as I told you, that is national issues, which is founding ourselves now in a crisis. On the issue of separation of resources, the department really told us that there is a problem of resources. But how are we managing these limited resources which we are having, which have to make an impact in the department? Because this department is one of these departments where it is going to be measured on structures, something from the eye, not airtime, which you buy a 1,000 rand, you blew it up in 3 days' time, you can't measure it. But unfortunately, this department it's going to be a unique one. The last one, Chairperson, is really the issue of we have good policies, all the government structures, but one thing which failed us as a government is your evaluation and monitoring structure. If that one is just for paperwork, it doesn't work. It must be something which is a team in the department which need to pull our program. So we have been accused as a government to come up with policy, but implementation of the policy is becoming one of our fundamental weaknesses. Thank you.
Thanks. Before I give it to the other members, I wanted to add something about the issue of administration, which is yourself a team teacher. You never gave us your iconogram about your staff in the department, and also even yourself, you are acting. For how long you are acting? Why were that particular position conceived? Always acting. Maybe you can assist us. And then another thing that I'll give it to them as they will add some of these questions. I mean, in terms of your colleagues, you must indicate us about the balance of gender. Because most of the time they don't give us the issue of the balance of gender. They just give us Congress of Boys only. While our policy indicates straight that even in the hierarchy of the positions, you must have women filling those particular positions. And then also, I'll put an example, right? Something else now. We saw the minister time and again busy destroying some of the houses which are not fit for the livelihood of human beings. But you never gave us a proper audit and tell us the system you used to evaluate that what happened to the houses. I mean, even the number of houses which you have demolished so far, and the houses that are about to be demolished. And we don't know from which province, if you can give us as well as breakdowns of those particular houses. And then I'll give it to the members to continue with the questions.
I'll
give it to the next honorable member. I think it's Mama Wole and Tuzana Obaba who Jacob's followed by Mama.
My head
was
up.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation you have given. My question is going to be based on rural development. And rural development is divided into farm dwellers and also people living in the villages. How do we assist these people who are living in the farm? slum dwellers and also people who are in villages. In villages, there is this problem between the municipality and the traditional leaders. Because sometimes the traditional leaders will provide land sites for people, and therefore after that people will need houses. And those villages have not been registered. So how do we assist the Department of Human Services? Secondly, how do we assist the middle class, people who don't want roads but want to build houses on their own? So how do we assist them? The other issue, since this has been, you have been given sanitation to be part of human settlement, do you have plan for that? And how do you, are you going to address the issue of sanitation as well as in rural areas? The other issue, do we have an audit of the land that is owned by government? And how do we, are we going to distribute this land to people who need land? The other one is the issue of accreditation to municipalities. From the report here, you said it's only 5 municipalities and 6 metros and 4 local municipalities. I think we need to speed up this issue of accreditation, because I think that is the only way in which we can be able to address the issue of housing backlog, because we are going to cut the middleman, because that money will go directly to municipalities. So what are problems? Because you are having about 283 municipalities. And if it's only 4 municipalities that have been accredited, when are we going to reach that quota of 283? So then how do we support these municipalities as Department of Housing so that they should be accredited? Because I think we need to speed up this issue of accreditation so that municipalities on their own must build houses, not we should have many men who do that, because they will be able to monitor and evaluate the work that has been done by the graders themselves. That's it.
Thank you. Over to you, Mama. After Omama, Mr. Mlenz, I'd like to be ready.
You.
Chairperson, thank you. Let me congratulate you activity on the gender balance of your delegation. It's very good. And I hope in your department, as you are, as a chairperson, I respect about the gender balance in your department. Let me believe that you have the gender focal point in the department, and that gender focal point, if you can give us maybe its status, because in your presentation I hear monitoring evaluation, but maybe we've got that gender, let's hear if we've got the gender focal point, and also maybe if you go down to provinces, whether that has also been implemented in all the provinces. Because I think even last year, when you were with us, I did put the same question. So most of the questions that we are putting now, you know, we mustn't every time when you come, you know, be as if it's like we are meeting for the first time. Because there are questions that we did ask last, and the questions that we need to hear progress on, maybe we should assist by saying, when you, if the select committee calls you, then you go back to your previous minutes to say, these were the points that were asked by the members. Now, what have we done in that regard? That will be of assistance. Not every year then we are asking same questions, and we're getting same presentations until the end of the test. So we want to know progress. that has been done. So the organogram is very important that we get to know from the minister, the deputy, the HOD, and what is, but most important is next to my heart is the gender focus. I would love to know whether the gender policy framework that was established by the Office on the Status of Women in the Presidency, because even if, I don't know whether it's still existing, but with the policy framework is still there, we must be implement. And the other one, my other question is on the program for permanent residents, the National Housing Code of 2009. If we can share with you, if you can share with us that program, even if it's not now, if you don't have it now, but if you can assist us with that program, so that we during our conference, if you want, we also, you know, make follow up on that. And the other one is your engagement with stakeholders in entering agreements with Platinum Mines for possible rollout projects in Limpopo and in Northwest. We did go through to Limpopo. And I think this agreement, I think they should have been done long ago, because our people in these provinces are really suffering. And then the other one is the 5 municipalities that are accredited to level 1. Can we be informed which ones are those? And there is another one, the department through the Chief Directorate on Monitoring and Evaluation. You completed the beneficiary occupancy audit in 7 of the 9 provinces. Which provinces are those, and when will the remaining 2 provinces be audited? And can we get, what is the result of the audited provinces? Thank you, Chairperson, for now.
Yes. There was a hand which was outmoded. But before the hand, I wanted to highlight something also before it's on my mind. You see, honourable members, I think this is our opportunity. The department is having a lot of entities. I'll put an example and also sectors. Within it, there is PHP. Which is People's Housing Project, of which we believe very strongly that it is in danger of failure. As members are just building their own houses with supplied materials. And without, number one, without adequate training, and also we believe that the project manager is not a housing specialist. And then also the RHP, which is the Rural Housing Project, it suffers some very typical delays, we don't know why, of which there is also the things which are still coming on in poor monitoring of it. Therefore, I'm just writing an example, some of the questions which might come. We have a lot of entities which the department is probing, providing billions of rights which we're supposed to ask for those things. And another practical example, yes, there is a program from the department where they identify some of the areas about the houses which are identified earlier, RPPs which are supposed to be demolished. What is your program? Since we started with the last year, what is your own new initiative program address the problems which are there, like the RDP and the alike. The problems which are there before, which have some challenges. What is the own program? And then, before I give to other members to ask, also we have this targeted housing growth in terms of the solar. The target which was set by the president. How far are you? Are you meeting the target or not? If not, why not? I'll give it to Mr. Blenzard. And then last, or Mr. Blenzard, after Mr. Blenzard, Mama Pija, the UT after that, Babu Dao will be the last one. Baba Blenzard.
Thanks, Chairperson. In the Eastern Cape, Chairperson, Kulelani, Nalabuya, the Mount Price Canyon. We used to call other people Abu Makaya. Do you know that? Makaya said, you grow the beer in white people and began to chant for that when you're about to enter the gas, you can have something. I'm not saying what I think of a
person. Chairperson, on the like note, we saw the minister talking 1 billion rand. Yes, in parliament, this was related to the president. Can we have that opportunity of being present? At least the department, particularly when it comes to. Come next week, we are going for our constituents. These are the individuals who have been for quite some time and are stressed with one explanation from us.
You will bear with me because I could learn that the page number of slides here doesn't match. But I will try. On the progress analysis, I marked slide 16.16. On departmental engagement with stakeholders, which I appreciate, but now my worry would be who participates in the identification of stakeholders, with which Ackerman has signed. With a particular reference to the stakeholders in Limpopo, we have been led that when you talk signing an agreement with mine, platinum mine, now one would want to know the acceptability of such mine by the greater Limpopo community, and then the recognition thereof of such acts. And which are these minds? Because there are some minds which are, I don't know how best to put it, in terms of being backward, in terms of being Russian, you know, oppressive at all. So one would like to hear the city, so that we are able to apply. On the demolishing of the poor state of, I will not harp on that, but if one could get the amount involved and the budget vote, which vote is currently being we see your 100% expenditure, which I am coming to. Maybe the rest. One would allege FDG, that this demolition program was but one way of fast-tracking expenditure going towards the end of the financial year. Because I'm sure you were paying those contractors.
Chairperson, I understand that we were given a feedback last year to raise the river in line with Mama Temo was raised, that the don't is. were told about the transformation, moving away from about Tulelisha and other to the housing development agents. Can we be told that has that process of doing away with such agents actually done as we speak now? Would I, when I go to Umzimvu local municipality where Tulelisha was engaged and where there were poorly built and unbuilt structures, and the Tulelisha was engaged to relook into that, would I, when I go there now, meet housing development agency or Tulelisha? When I go to Kedi, where you have got unbuilt or half built structures, where in the atrium, right in the middle of the house, would I meet Tulelisha or would I meet the housing development agency? Chairperson, on pilot project, remember the department has just reported to us that there was progress and we even showed land, if you remember, on the pilot project. I know there was one in Eastern Cape, in Nelson Mandela. There's one here in Western Cape, and I don't know the other one. If we could get progress reports, we don't only want to hear bad news, Chairperson. Even the good news is there is progress. Let's not get news only from the media. If we could be told that there has been progress, because I know with some there has been progress, Chairperson. If we could be told for the sake of record. Chairperson, as a rural boy, I would always be interested in rural development. Bear with me. When you are talking rural housing loan fund, how is this fund reaching out there? Does the department, I know this fund is run almost separately, but the department is monitoring. Does the department see to it that the actual beneficiaries get hold of it? Do they know if they have? It goes with, I haven't heard the department talking about the low-cost housing in rural areas. Those rural housing and low-cost housing. Honorable Jacobs was referring to. We don't want everybody to go from in town. So that the applied in the Act, slides 22 and 51, they are talking figures. Slide 22 is talking of the Integrated Housing and Human Settlement Development Grant, where we are given the expenditure trends there. You have 100% in Eastern Cape, 100% in the state, 103% in and 100%, right? Which is way down. You go to slide 61. I will mention maybe the heading so that they see. It's delivery of housing opportunities. The preliminary unit delivered in 2009-2010, where you have got 10 cases with 8 points. Blah blah blah, and you go down, go down. It's 219. Even there, you link that with the challenges your site doesn't have, where you are reflecting on the department that there is a monitoring and evaluation or capacity challenge. Now, how do you reconcile this? How are you sure that there is authenticity in these figures given? How sure when you know that you have got this capacity challenge? And you are further saying your medicine to that in your slide 75 is that you're going to have direct support. And the next question would be how?
how direct could be that? Flying from national to all the provinces, to all your 283 municipalities. You know, I would imagine. Lastly, Chairperson, on your challenges, I didn't hear the department talking about the land claims. In the Eastern Cape, no matter how much, it's a pity they say there's 100% deliver, and I don't know how in the Eastern Cape. Honestly, I honestly wonder how. Maybe MEC Mabandla will have to write her a letter and seek for an explanation and take her to some of these municipalities where I know that we are sitting with land claims. Where even you go to Mount Abbey, for instance, even the town Mount Abbey is claimed. The town. Justifiably. If you go to Mount Frey, even the town is claimed. In a majority of places, you will find that. And two, there is land invasion, which is linked to these land claims. But I didn't get to talking about this. So one would want to know. Thanks, Chairperson.
Baba, Lenza. Sorry, Baba, or Chairperson.
Chief.
Yes. Baba, Chairman, followed by Mamuma, teacher.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I want to thank the department for this briefing. It's quite informative. But what I would like to know or suggest is, you know, I feel sometimes, not sometimes, most of the times when a department come and brief us, or the committee is there, they used to put the good food forward. I would like to know the difficulties which experience drafting this document. There should be. I mean, we are here as a committee not to crucify, not to look for loopholes. We are here to serve the people. That will say through all the departments and all the committees we serve. So I would appreciate it if we can know, maybe not now because time is too short, what difficulties for the book here that you encounter or see the red lights flicker, give to us. They're open. I think through the chair we can ask for a closer communication. The document we already received this morning, it's quite intensive, it is informative. We can't ask all the questions that we want to. Fortunately, we do have a mechanism to ask questions, written questions to the department. We will surely do that. But I would like the department through the chair to take us in confidence, give us what is on the table, give us all the red lights, and we can take it from there. I thank you, Chief.
Okay. Mama, my teacher.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to ask any questions. I just want to put it through to this meeting that seated here, I'm very disappointed the way we are running our service delivery, because we are seated here as politicians and we have to prove to the people of South Africa that we are here serving them. And in order to serve them, departments are the ones that must implement. And this is not the first meeting. And as a politician, since I've been in Parliament last year, there isn't a single thing that I can go back during elections door to door to indicate to the people who brought me here that the challenges you raised during the previous elections, we have gone so far, we failed here because of 1, 2, 3. And seated here,
trying to check precisely what it is that is happening, because the president of the country has clearly indicated that we must work from day one. And seated here, if I can count how many thousands spent just for this meeting, it's a lot. And it's just for a few hours. And to me, the questions that are being raised here, right now I'm feeling bored, to be honest, because I'm seated here, all the things that we wanted to know, we wanted to be clarified during the next meeting, we are not having anything. And it's like it's a routine that department will just come and with a very nice a document, you see, and we will just be like errors, asking same question, every meeting, same question. So I'm just rounding up what I gathered as members were speaking. Now I'm very disappointed. And we do not want to be in a meeting like with an interrogation room, because here we must have a mutual understanding of service delivered, visible service delivered. Paperwork does not mean a thing. The people who brought us the staff cannot even read. What they want is the actual thing happening where they live, where they stay. Whose houses really. Now, I don't know how to express my disappointment, really. And this government is spending a lot of money, administrative-wise and with the political component. But really, we are not going there where people expect us to go. So I'm just posing it so that at least when each one of us, both components, somewhere in the own corner, should do an introspection. Where are we taking our people to? Because they have pinned their hopes on us. And we are the ones who suffer, because we are the ones who have direct contact with those masses on the ground. I'd like to say that departments are failing us. Next year, we are going for elections. What am I going to tell the same people that I promised them 1, 2, 3 with this housing? I'm very disappointed.
All right, honourable members, what I will request from you, may you please be focused, because there are a lot of entities around. It's very broad to say, to point the finger while we're not specific, that because in terms of delivery, under the department there are a lot of entities which are responsible direct for something. I think a department, it is a component which is synchronizing all the entities under it. Therefore, let's go back to our drawing boards and prepare ourselves that what do we want exactly to extract from the department. I'll put an example. The previous speakers were speaking about rural development, etc., etc. It's known. We mustn't be scared of going to the people, because also, I'll put an example. The SONA from the address from the president, besides asking the department, I can ask a lot of questions. If given time, I can ask more than 1,000 questions about the issue which was raised by the president, that how far are you about this and this and this and this and this and this. So I think your comment is taken, but we must relate it to the relevant people. I mean, not people, to the relevant sectors.
No.
I'm coming,
no.
Mr. Mlinzana, I'm still talking. I mean, am I out of order? We gave you a chance to speak. No, Mr. Mlinzana.
No, I'm afraid of them.
Okay, fine. I gave you an opportunity to speak. No, wait, Mr. Mlinzana. I'll give an opportunity to talk. I didn't recognize you. I'm still a chairperson. Fine. Or further that, let me give it to Honorable Member Dow an opportunity.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know now. It's an unfortunate for me to be the last one. But probably I'll manage. No, Chair, I think the Lord has been already asked to the department, and I just wanted to add a few things. For instance, the question of on rural development, and I want to put context to it, that there was a rural development or rural housing summit that was convened some time back, I think it's about 2 or 3 years ago, under the leadership of the former minister, Sisulu. There were recommendations, models proposed out of that summit in terms of how to take processes of rural housing forward. So if one can get a sense of how far that process is, as the department abandoned everything that was done or resolved upon at that particular summit, or are you reworking the processes as agreed to? Secondly, the question of the linkage. I want to link the issue of housing or construction of housing with economic development. Because if you look at the present administration, there's a particular trajectory in terms of economic growth that the administration has adopted. And I might have missed that input during the earlier presentation, or when the presentation was done at the beginning. But it would be good to get a sense of the department's approach towards its contribution to these challenges. How does the department position itself as an instrument of economic growth as well, fighting issues of unemployment, skills development, job creation, and not only about entrepreneurship, but to the extent to which in building this growth or economic models or whatsoever, the extent of using cooperatives as an instrument also of construction of houses or human settlement. I don't want to say houses because it then takes away the broader mandate of the department and limits it to a housing department, for which the direction now is we are not a housing department. So I'm raising it in that context. In your processes of establishing this human settlement, the linkage of that with economic development, and especially the support to cooperatives and so forth. The link to that, of course, would be your anti-corruption strategy, because that's also one of the things that has come out to be something that is not assisting us at all in terms of our department. I know that through your audit investigations, internal investigations and all that, the unscrupulous contractors that you have arrested and all those sorts of things. But what is key here is the system that you have put in place now to ensure that not only do you react to corrupt practices, but you are able to preempt them and to prevent them even before they happen. And many models, of course, we know of the might be using their connections within the department and not actually being there on the ground in the process of construction of houses. How then do you put in place, or do you have those systems in place to avoid the problems that we are having now? Because that will also then respond to the question of the construction or demolition of the badly constructed houses by these unscrupulous contractors. And over and above that, what would be key to me, what is key here in terms of the demolition of these badly constructed houses is the alternative. The alternative. If you demolish my house, where are you putting me? If my grandmother's house is going to be demolished because it's identified as one of those houses, where is she going to be housed? Are there alternatives that have been put in place to ensure that we don't find our people again in formal or constructing shacks as informal as an alternative way of having a roof whilst waiting for his or her house to be built and so on. It would be important for us to get that understanding of your program one. Before I get to program one, we know there have been legal battles, especially in the Western Cape, around the acquisition of land. The DA is saying that the department has fraudulently acquired a piece of land that was meant for the second phase of N2 Gateway. It would be important for us just to get a sense of how far that process is, what is happening now, and how do you intend, of course, still proceeding with the process. And still on the N2 Gateway. When the N2 Gateway was introduced some time back, it was said that Western Cape is going to be used as a national pilot. And once the Western Cape has been used as a national pilot, there will be provincial pilots. And of course, Eastern Cape has already raised the issue. Provinces were expected to identify those pilot projects and so forth. And it would be important for us to know. Over and above that, I want now to raise this as a Lord Governor. You raise this as Eastern Cape Governor. Now, in the Northern Cape, it was said that Leratong Park was identified as a pilot for the Northern Cape. And another place, I just forgot its name, it's in Colesbury. Now, you see what is worrying is that there is so much of a disjunction between what national is doing, what provinces are doing, and what municipalities are doing. Why I'm raising this is because having listened to the Premier's speech, State of the Province address of the Northern Cape, in terms of housing projects and money allocated for housing projects that are going to be undertaken during this financial year, there's no mention of Leratong Park. There's no mention of Leratong Park. Whereas the people of Leratong Park have been promised for so long, or do we want an uprising in Leratong Park or a riot in Leratong Park before now we can react again and say, no, we are still working on this. It is not happening. And I would refer you to the Premier speech on that particular matter, because initially one had expected that the pilot project, not only shall it be a matter for national department, but it's going to be a collaboration between the municipality, the province, national, and including your private sector or stakeholders that would have had an interest in investing in some of these projects and so forth. But now if you have a national department saying this, provincial is speaking something else, because APSA mentioned something else about the issues of Lerato Park, and they promised those people those kind of things. So it will be quite important that these matters are put into perspective so that people do know exactly what is it that they are expected to do. The issue of the billion that you are talking of, Honorable Leonard, I think I would have loved the department to, you know, I understand what the minister is doing, I mean, in support of what he's doing, the involvement and the commitment of the private sector, and including particularly banks. But there's a worrying factor. There's a worrying statement immediately after the agreement yesterday, I think it was signed. Yesterday. Or was it signed? Between the minister and the banks? Or was it just an understanding? A discussion. But you see, there's a very, very serious worrying statement that came from the banking sector. You see, much as they are in support of cushioning those who fall out, either before or after, the problem, what they are still going to be implementing is to stick, it was something like, yes, we agree, we're in support, but ours, we are going to continue to implement the national credit limit. What does that say? Because it defeats the very same objective that the government wants to achieve, or the department wants to achieve, in terms of cushioning those whom before they cannot afford, or even after they can still not afford or do not qualify for subsidized houses and so forth. So I think it's a matter, maybe it's not a matter for this session. It could be an issue it could be a policy matter that we can engage at the political level with the minister and so forth, in order to ensure that the last issue, Chair. I agree with Honorable Jacobs in terms of the fast tracking of the accreditation of municipalities. But you see, what is worrying there with the accreditation of municipalities is the admission by the department to say that there is some lack of capacity, especially administrative capacity. Now, if you don't have that capacity, how are you going to support those municipalities that you have accredited? And I'm raising this against the backdrop of the turnaround strategy of municipalities as proposed by the Minister for Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. The problems and the capacity problems in particular that have been picked up in our municipalities and so forth. And all those other ills, man, that our municipalities are confronted with. Whether if we are comfortable and ready, I would say yes, I support, but if you're not ready, I would not encourage the department to move, because we may sit with the same problem, if not worsen the situation of pushing for the accreditation of municipalities, giving them grant on the status of the development or developers, and then only to find out this thing backfire again in our faces. So I think it's a matter that whilst, yes, we want to do it, we really want to see it happening, we need to treat it with caution. And obviously it would require also a very close working relationship with COPTA. Because if you miss that point, you might accredit a municipality only to find out, according to the assessment and research or investigations by COPTA, is one of the worst performing municipalities. You know, so it would be quite important that strategic relationship is built and strengthened to avoid embarrassment. Maybe yes, last year, on your slide, a very interesting aspect I saw in slide 6. There's a slide that speaks about, I think it's program number one on administration, that speaks to the accommodation. Yeah, I think it's program one. It speaks to the issue of there's an amount of money that you have set aside for accommodation and offers accommodation or something like that. Now, you know, the first question that came to mind was, what then is the role of public works? Is public works not the custodian of property to the point where it even makes office space available, maintenance, and all that for the department? Or is there something different? It would be good if you can get that understanding to say what office space and accommodation, that amount of money, are you paying rent, and who owns that building? Is it not public works? So it would be good for us to just get a sense of that. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Tao, before I give it to the department, maybe I will add one or two. Yes, Mama, I'll give you a chance. I think I didn't give you a chance to speak. Okay, fine, Mama, I'll give it an opportunity. From the department side, the thing which was raised, I was triggered by Honorable Zhao about some of the challenges which is you wrote yourself, that it's lack of shared understanding. Before that, an inadequate intergovernmental coordination for accelerated housing delivery. I think it's very serious. But you don't give us guides. Until when? What to do until when? But we have also recognized that there is a problem. To me, again, if we recall well, concerning the issue of the houses which have been identified that they are not fit for human beings, there is a challenge if your systems are not talking to each other. Number one, we never receive even a single day that how many constructors which were involved in, what are those constructors which were involved in those atrocities in the different provinces. And also, which is giving more problems, how to safeguard that these people don't continue this, because it is alleged that some of these people are changing names. For example, if Pet Construction has been identified was involved in fraud or in the act of corruption, the very same face, it changed only the name and starts another construction. So, in that regard, how do you prevent such thing not to happen? Because it's the very same thing, the person who's doing the very same thing. And again, the issue of special investigation unit, you do have a special investigation unit, but you never told us, per proving, that here are the things you are in, the things which have you found it in the various provinces, that this and this were corruption, whatever, these steps were taken. It's silence. The only thing is rough estimations of the bulk, maybe bulk amount which can be shown as recovered money, but from where? And then before I give it to Mama, I think I'll come with another one of these national leaders, construction, whatever. Mama, over to you.
Chairperson, thank you. I think it is slide 75, on your challenges in adequate intergovernmental coordination for accelerated housing delivery. Then your response is that other challenges, lack of capacity to monitor and evaluate the implementation of housing programs. Then the response is direct support to provinces and municipalities on the implementation of projects. supporting projects where there are blockages and facilitating cooperation with the private sector. The question is then, is a request. Can we have a breakdown of provinces where there are blocked projects? And also, the reason for blockages. And then on the slide below, you've got your challenge there. I'm not going to read it. And then your response is that the allocation for the Social Housing Foundation has been retained until the regulator has been established. The question is, by when will this regulator be established? And also, you know, I think maybe next time, if you talk like further changes to the allocation mechanisms are being pursued to take into account capacity challenges, you know, on other things, if you can really be specific, numbers are fine. But if you can be specific, you know, we mustn't speak theory. We must be straight to the present.
Thank you. Last one. I thought Mr. Jacobs would raise this thing because I remember, I don't know whether we visited one of the entities or whether it was last year, about the issue of National Home Builders Registration Council. If maybe you can clarify us that how far you, because lastly, if I recall very well, it was giving a lot of problems. Like, the people who are disadvantaged is the people who were disadvantaged before. But people who are coming up, these small constructors, they are still suffering about some of these restrictions which are put in there that want this in order to qualify in terms of registration. Then I'll give it to the department to respond to some of these questions. Thank you.
I will deal with quite some of them, and a few that will require my colleagues to provide details will then be passed on to them. The first question, comment about the issue of the biggest problem in SA in housing and the development of informal settlement, digital settlement, etc. I think that is why we have a program that was developed and called informal settlement upgrade. But I think the question also further goes to ask the question as to how do we prevent it from occurring. I think the member shall, if it's possible, probably shall recall that this matter has been with MINMEC for quite some time, certainly the last session of MINMEC, sort of the previous electoral cycle. And MINMEC resolved to pilot legislation to prevent the mushrooming of slums to the KwaZulu-Natal province. And this, the legislation was developed to deal with that, which was prescribing management activities required for each of the municipalities to deal with the issue of mushrooming of this settlement, and also ensuring that it deals with some of the loopholes that exist currently. While challenged, we have to go through a lengthy legal process of appeals and counter appeals. And I think
still, it's still not resolved, but it's going to resolve it. We've dealt with to its conclusion. I think the Zabashan has been done a lot of challenge. Yes, in case of death. So we are in that process. It's not that there isn't anything being done, because that legislation would be able to assist in ensuring that the preventative measures are there. In the informal settlement upgrading, there is a provision, for example, which has been criticized by the social scientists, of effectively saying when we are developing a new, when we are upgrading the informal settlement, we put the structure, we don't want to see the redevelopment of a shell. And that is okay, because families grow, people are able to come in and there's still a shortage. And those are the kinds of things that we would. I know that the social scientists have raised a number of things throughout the literature, written by some of the people who have been critiquing our information. Really some issues with that. But I think that is what government is doing in order to ensure that at least our settlements are formalized, remain formal, and continue to provide the dignity that is intended in line with the Constitution. I think, Chair, with the arguments being put to counter the issue of the issues raised around in the previous case, which we joined to assist the province to defend the constitutional, we think we have a fair chance of winning, of making it. And if that is the case, then that legislation will then be applied nationally. And once it is applied, with the resources that it will require, because municipalities then will also, I think some municipalities will then have to provide the sufficient resources to have the ability to manage this, because you need to be able to monitor and make sure that you prevent at the point of starting, not when they've already developed. Because after some time, then those people have rights and you have a lengthy process of dealing with them. And in fact, if you take that case and the case in Kaudet, where in the inner city, the court in a matter between private people and some people who were in the government, then made the decision that if we actually, when we visit this people, or until we visit these people, government has a responsibility to pay rent to these people whose properties were owned. If you combine those two, I mean, we are going nowhere. Mm. And those are the kinds of things we are facing. Mm. And that case too is being challenged on the basis of the programs and the intention of government. And I think we should think some of those judgments may have been made without due consideration of all of those. But the reality is that we are faced with all these things in our constitutional democracy with some of those issues that continue to challenge us. Our program is aimed at addressing the plight of poor South Africans. I'm sure you're talking about the capital program that is funded by government. But I think the development of human settlement deals with the whole issues of settlements for all people in South Africa, generally. Our housing is provided largely by ourselves for the work. The human settlement department provides the environment, the regulating, etc., etc., some of which is done by, for example, to bylaws. That provides an environment in which there is stability, and therefore the ability for those properties to increase in value as assets. And that nothing else that government can do in that situation. In the next group, which I think is the group that we are dealing with regard to the 1 billion guarantee scheme, is one where people do add some amount, but are unable
to access to the full extent the solution for their housing needs and programs. We provide an ability to rent, but some of them are households may be bigger than or may not be able to have affordable rent at a particular point where they are. There is an option, ownership option, with regard to that. But when they get, they choose the ownership option, then there's an expectation that you should be also raising low. That's where the 1 billion guarantee comes. I'll come back to it later as to what the intention is in that regard. Then those who are unable to provide solutions, which is the lower end, under 2,500, those are the ones that are getting a housing solution from government with an intention of ensuring that they are able to do that. They, if for example, they are a small household of young people and they can access, and in fact, there are separate rental housing in cases, London, in some of those projects, are young people who are either coming out of university and seeking work or in hands, etc. They get stipends, some salary, and they then rent while they are building their application, their etc. Foreigners, illegal occupiers, that were found with them, that was the sense of audience, that was the sense. It did work with regard to some of them. And I think, Chair, I must say, it would be doing injustice to some of the topics if, I think we just referred to some of them without giving their full details, because they themselves just require a proper presentation of the methodology, the outcomes of those researches, and what trends are they doing, what are they collaborated independently, etc., etc., so that we can then be in a position to develop an appropriate policy. Chair, if we were in the acting much more frequently on some of these things, we could then get a specific dedicated presentation that provides the discussion on those issues. But we do not. We do find that in some cases illegal occupants, and by illegal they don't have ownership documentation, etc., because they may have been given by a family that is desperate for money or whatever it is, occupation of the house on the basis that they are owning it. But most of them would not have the diversity, the title for those properties. However, Chair, that excludes those people constitutionally who are regarded as having the same rights as citizens or residents, permanent residents, in accordance with the definition that are internationally accepted about how you contact and acquire citizenship. So very often there have been conflation of those cases in some of the problems that we have seen, where people, once you go to their records, you discover that they have a resident status, and in that regard they are qualified for housing solution. They are not a majority. And secondly, I think when you are doing informal settlement upgrading, and you actually then have to do identification of each family, you find the individuals, there is a process for dealing with them and removing them from the project, etc., etc., because they should be accommodated differently. Or they should be able to buy or rent housing solutions for themselves. But we have found in these cases, they are in the research where when you do 10 years down the line, occupants want to find that it's no longer the tenant who has given them the house, who is on our record, who is in the house. And those are those issues are being addressed. So that if we can have that, but we have to have a policy response to some of this. How do you deal with those people in terms of their victim? Then you will end up with this short cycle of having to find out ultimate documentation and all of this. And those are challenges. If Chair, you were saying, be honest with us, give us real, challenges, some of them are constitutionally related. And I think we do not have all the resources in working to deal with them. We will attempt to be here and wait for the policy and the leadership to find solutions to some of them. I mean, yesterday we were talking about some of the things, and 15 years down the line, even in that, there are specific things we may say are not quite appropriate now, which we put in our constitution. Because we are doing good evaluations, we do the evaluation, find the problem, you can't find the solution because you don't want to admit the root cause of that problem. And these are the kinds of things that really the country needs to confront. We are working with the Department of Rural Development. We have been put into their practice, but we are still engaging on the issue of how to make rural and rural sanitation. Because we now have that program from what I said, rural sanitation, which is largely dealing with the backlog that exists in the rural sanitation, in the rural area. We are doing that with rural development. Maybe once we have concluded some of the delivery aspects of that, we could do a joint with rural development. I think if you, it may be that it's not all the rural places that have been covered, but if you go, for example, to Middle East, comes from the they are not waterborne. They can't be, because that's the solution for that is appropriate in that. Together with the hygiene program that is related to the management of this, some of it may not have been as effective as it should be, because I think there have been a lack of going back to check if we can keep those green mountain standards in maintaining that. And that is what we now do in the strategy into their program currently. But in any case, if it doesn't arrive to something like we'll look at the new program. But there is a program, if you look at the allocation for the next 2 years, we are dealing with some of the quite a number of those areas. Again, if we have an opportunity to perhaps to keep the sanitation program that we have, which is largely dealing with those issues, in some assessments, and some of the assessments where people build houses without toilets, so that we can clean up that problem by using this program. And that is in the new plan. We can look at that plan, and there are allocations, I think they are attached to the Division of Revenue Act. Then municipalities where this record have occurred, where municipalities are almost ready with implementation program. And that program is a 2 year program, the 10 years we have still after this that implementing it, we are still at after implementing it. There is a question general that says, are you going to be able to have to be able to have the capacity to deliver all the capital that you said to be considered to be ambitious? Chair, the approach we are looking at, and perhaps at one point might be political language we are running for, is that we've been able to build a great life for being dead, successful, world class, on time, a ministry that is a result we need to build to our goals. But generally, Chair, there is a continuous capacity that is there. There we are delivering, albeit there are, in some cases, issues of quality, etc. But there is delivery. College, and there are resources. Remember, these resources are not only in Dublin. They are resources that are used by government, the small contractors, and bigger contractors. I think the strategy why we want to employ is to garner that capacity that is now going to be left unused out of the, once we finish the stage and all of the infrastructure that is being concluded now, to see if we cannot take some of that back into the management. Well, at the moment, we have been able to produce completed and uncompleted, averaging over 200,000. We think we can, that is the base for which we start, and therefore we will be able to meet using that capacity and enhancing it with the spare capacity that may arise out of these contractors that are coming out of the current infrastructure programs and the stadium. But at a provincial level, there are differing levels of capacity to manage, which is one of the questions that is in the report, where we recognize that the lack of capacity. Well, for example, Gauteng is better capacity than Free State as we speak, because Free State has just split away from local government. And like Eastern Cape, when they started, they are experiencing this issue of deficient capacity, which they are asking national to assist with in ensuring that we can get them the resources that are required for them. Because it's been necessary that they do not operate as a program in a department with local government and traditional office, but rather as a department that deals with all of these aspects of human assessment, sophisticated as they are, of coordination, of more supervision of the implementation of projects, of more project management, cash flow management, etc., which some provinces lack. In fact, most municipalities would not have dedicated capacity for that kind of thing for housing and development projects. Hence, I'm going to come back to that question Honorable Chair Member referred to with regard to what is it that we do with accreditation, given that accreditation is desirable. What is it that we do with regard to accrediting municipalities in a manner that is not irresponsible for the province and for the national in the mandate of delivering housing? Another program, Chair, and I think we'll need to check how we deal with it. This issue of fraud prevention, the anti-fraud strategy, anti-corruption strategy, I think the members referred to the demolition of houses, etc. I must indicate that to some extent we might be guilty of not having communicated appropriately on the one hand, or those who reported particularly publicly about what is it that is in that program, and despite the answers to questions, etc. Though that program isn't about just demolition of everything. There is partial rectification of units. There are those which are very unhealthy, unsafe, that needs to be demolished. Yes, they get demolished. But some of them are just partial rectification, completion wasn't done correctly, finishing, etc., snagging wasn't done appropriately, and some of those things result in a quicker deterioration of the condition of the house. And therefore, it would require to be rectified. We can provide the statistics from the provincial plan that have been submitted with regard to each province's contribution towards this program. But it is about a spread of activities, not just demolition. Demolition, partial demolition, rectification, completion, etc. And the approach, Chair, is that in each case, the contractor who was responsible is being asked to rectify such things. If they don't, because there's a responsibility for government. I mean, there's been a reported case of somebody who may allegedly have been killed because of the house that fell. Those things can expose government big time to litigation and liability. And therefore we have an opportunity, we have a duty to rectify that kind of situation immediately when we discover it, so that at least we can prevent the exposure of government to such litigation. And in that regard, Chair, while the process of taking the responsible contractor to task, we are forced to make good that situation. And when we do so, using temporary relocation facility under the emergency housing program, we are able to provide temporary interim accommodation for the person who's been removed from the house, reconstruct the house, and then bring back that person to that house. That is what the program provides. In the standard, the house that was shown, that old lady was healed. Her temporary unit was in the same premises at the back. I think the village, the kids didn't go to show that one. So the main house was constructed, and that structure will then be removed once that unit is completed. In some cases, then there might be a need to remove the person from the premises. It depends on the circumstances of the situation. The Special Investigative Unit is working on a number of these contracts already. They look at what went wrong with this contract, who did not enforce what was supposed to be enforced. What we also have discovered is that some of the contracts were very weak. Some of the contracts, from government perspective, would have been weak, open-ended, allowed some of the abuse, and co-coupled with people who were not held accountable at the time for doing well, allowed the space, provided the space for people to abuse government. All of them are being looked at on their own merits, and recoveries are on the same basis as the recoveries that have been reported are going to be instituted or are instituted where the cases have been concluded. And in that regard, Chair, we can provide, without a presentation, a report on the progress on the fraud. Because from time to time, we have a presentation to the fraud for the committee, and because they requested that information. We can provide the up-to-date information of where some of those are, including those that were discovered by the Auditor General, or people who accessed the subsidy who were not qualified, who lied about their incomes, etc. So that is what we are doing, Chair. Are we training people? Are we making sure that people are fit for purpose? Chair, we are training people in various activities and areas. Coupled with the fact that people are generally mobile, which is a general challenge, each department, even the provincial department, have a training budget that they provide depending on what they are doing in the organization. We also have a national capacity building program, which provides training on policy, new policy, old policy, as discovered by the monitoring unit, that there is a deficiency in this, there is a deficiency in understanding, including what you have raised as a challenge, that issue of what we discovered as an uniform way of understanding of what PNG is about, and therefore we will develop a program to create that awareness get through and present the full aspect of leadership, plus the new code to those governments and practitioners in the various provinces. And that capacity is very important. It includes training to municipal officials, and certainly all affected municipalities are part of that program going forward. In the government, I think the issue of the intergovernmental forums and the realization that people, they generally tend to carry their own agendas, targets, and disregard it. But it's been a problem. It's at the center of the coordination, because no matter how low, how much we have been discussing in the past, it's always gentlemen's understanding, or even like connecting. Gentlemen's understanding. Then education says, hey, our program is there. We are still dealing with some of us, they are still dealing with backlog in according to this criteria and the development of houses. In some cases, there would be the eventual meeting of the staff, particularly in cases where the premier and provincial level have been very strict in dealing with issues of development. But it remains. What is happening at the moment, for example, for the targets that were outlined by the president, starting after the president had announced, we first have to make sure that provinces understand the targets, understand their own area, their own expected, their own targets, and what is expected of them. We are clearing that. We are having formal discussions with each of the departments that are contributing to that. Education, we're not going to leave that. There will be agreements signed. Not just agreements understanding. Agreements signed, changing of those things for the president and the that's the answer. Human those informal agreements, those areas that need to be developed. Everybody must live up. They are part to those. And then after that, they can deal with their normal business as well. But those areas are going to be covered, prioritized. There's also a commitment that by the time we do the budget this year, there will be a full commitment of all of the activities that are required for those areas. In the Treasury knows they are now using this as a basis for prioritization of allocation. The outcome of it. And I think, Chair, for the first time, it has assisted us in ensuring that we do not just have discussions as departments, we go there with mandates for commitment. If you can't make it, you've got to follow up and make sure that you can do that. And I think for the first time, let's give it time. It is the process that is most likely to succeed than we have been able before, because at least at the moment we are addressing the issue on its own. At the workshop of director general, we came to the conclusion that perhaps we will put this process will be implemented, but when there are legal loopholes that are causing problems, those must be dealt with immediately. And I think by the HUTA, there will be a plethora of those issues that need to be eliminated that prevent coordination. This independence of spheres. There are legal interpretations. You cannot tell another sphere. You can tell them up to a point. For an example, a very interesting thing. Those departments with concurrent functions. House. We have a conditional grant, we discuss the priorities of the province. But the province has priorities at a position that are led by the premier. What is the disjunction of the times between that premier and the mayor? Whatever. It's been a problem. And that's a constitutional problem. And that requires to be addressed. If we are to in one direction. You can't, but remember, we develop we develop priority, sorry, we develop policy that is uniform. The Constitution says you can, as a province, develop policy that is consistent, that is not inconsistent with the national policy. The issue of privatization might be that a province comes with its plan to you to help, and that plan constitutional complies with all of the requirements to give that department. And it says, this is our priority, it's not important that they understand. Those nuances. The only way you can resolve them is using an intergovernmental dispute mechanism, which can take 5 years, or have the matter resolved in the constitution as a constitutional court. And some of the advisors say, well, the chances of succeeding one way or the other are 50-50, unless you deal with the real issue of how you deal with the interpretation of the independence of the state from one another. I'm just making that example. And the only time we can test it is when it is reaching the constitutional court. But at this point, nobody has gone there. But that continues. The issue of the services, Chair. I think in the forums where we're discussing the outcome, this is one of the issues that is being addressed specifically. Most of the time, these shortages have been funding later, and they have to be funded. We will see which areas where money is being taken. But where there is a project, a human settlement project that is prioritized in terms of the outcome, the services will be provided, the higher requirement for the development of the settlement. So that you can avoid that issue of Lerato Park. Where now, at some point, everybody is going back. Start with bulk that is required for that settlement. Because now the bulk that would have been there would have been planned for a smaller number of people. Changes have happened, migration takes place, immigration within, etc. The community's numbers have grown. Then you have to take a view and say, if I develop services today, and remember in some of these areas, have long-term investments by partners, which is what APSA, I think, to some extent would have raised, and it helped us to understand some of those. If they're going to bond those houses, they're not bonding them for 24 or 5 years, 10 years. They bond them for 30 years, and therefore you have to make sure that at least those people will have sustainable services. That will not result, because what usually happens is that once people start to have problems of sewage and all of these things, very often they are encouraged not to pay. They tend to say, we will not pay. If in a bonded house, there is a problem of structure, everything, all those things, it ends up in non-payment. That's generally the behavioral issue that APSA is concerned about. Now, that is being addressed. They will provide the update to the customer. But I'm making an example of that particular project because those are the kind of things that you mentioned. Once they did their full analysis and they said, no, you do not need, you can't do, you can't just upgrade this bulk services. You must make sure that you develop something that is sustainable. You must keep view of the growth that is likely to keep the ECI. If you're not going to do that, our investment may be lost before the 10 years expire. That's why. Because there will be.
This is what the challenge that because we talk and say racist in the fourth.
We have challenged I think we have challenged
they cannot say the left thing is doing the boycott thing. But if they are not racist about something, it's a black thing
now. We challenge some of the assumptions that have been made, but I think we also have to look at the infrastructure as well, so that it gets resolved in the interest of sufficient, some of the resistance may be sufficiently disguised, but I think you have to look at what is being presented and respond from a development perspective. We will, there's an issue about our mission to fill the post by next year. We want to fill the post. Notwithstanding the challenges that may exist. And I think in that respect, I'm going to answer the question for that to, which was raised by the chairperson, organogram. And unfortunately, we did not bring the organogram of the department. I am asking because the DG of the department left effectively from the 1st of January this year. I started acting. But during that period, there were new courses, which are built into this. We could not, therefore, put a recruitment process in place until that issue is resolved appropriately and amicably. And that advertisement was placed on January. It ran its course in the process of interviews was undertaken. Soon, the minister will be in a position to announce a new DG. So it's not that it's been delayed because you have to observe processes, but that issue is being addressed appropriately. So I think it also relates to the issue of capacity. We will be running various processes of, I think we have already, we've been putting in access to newspapers continuously, but there will be a period of use of many of them. We had to look at the functions that have been undertaken, goals that have been undertaken, and match them with what we need in terms of the human settlement requirements. Continue to determine because you have things change and you have to respond appropriately to the changes that are occurring. And in that regard, I think we will try to be as close to 100% as possible because we need the resources to implement our program. And the issue of land is, remember, we passed the legislation. You passed the legislation. I think we don't pass the legislation. We supported the government. Let me make that distinction. For the establishment of the HDA, but precisely because of the issue of question of land. And they started operating from the first of the year. It is their mandate, they are functioning, they have developed, they are working on auditing the various municipalities, putting a register, national register. They are working with Public Works, Department of Former Land Affairs and Land Reform. In doing that, we again the committee. The committee is at liberty to call that institution to present its strategic plan and its plans with regard to land. But from our perspective, they are working on the issue of land. They also, for an example, took possession of the land that was offloaded by Transnet in various areas, which is now also in. Land rights. That land they discuss with the municipalities and the provinces for the usage of the land. I think that is how we are managing the issue of land. It's not yet complete. They are working on that register. Their job is to identify the land, enter into appropriate negotiations, and sometimes they have to acquire the land. as a last resort, if for example they have not been able to acquire the land because of pricing problems, they can then utilize the legislation appropriate for appropriation of that land. They have not yet done that yet. But we have indicated to them that when and if for example that prevents implementation of outcomes, we may need to as I said, Chair, the committee can actually invite them to get full details of what they are doing. There is a comment about good policies and the problem of monitoring and evaluation. I can add, I think most of our projects have been and will be gathered by implementation also. I can add to the evaluation and monitoring implementation. Most times, good policies, very well thought through. In fact, some of them have been copied by countries like Brazil. Our biggest policy is to give, and I think that is something that is being addressed at the moment. Because I think we'll make assumptions about capacity. For example, in the housing act, sorry, code, you would have provided some expansion to the developer. The assumption was that you need to go and check if they are going to act as developers, do they have what a developer would have in giving you that? We assume that because of the scale of government, they'll be able to do that. Hence, we have the kinds of problems we have. Our accreditation program, Honorable Member, is rigorous. Before a municipal gets that accreditation, we send a team to assess the municipality. Do they have a unit for housing? What are the infrastructure arrangements in the municipality? And that's been largely one of the reasons why, even after the accreditation program was approved, there was slowness in taking that. Methods, yes, certain methods are more aggressive than others. I think they are some now that are getting level 2. Very soon they'll get level 3. Because the conditionalities of that accreditation, we are this good. We have money that we give to them as well. So that increases the capacity. We employ people for them for a limited period. They must commit them to maintaining that. Because once it's become a program for municipality constitutional, then they can, through the assignment, then they should take responsibility as well for ensuring that it is maintained appropriately. So our accreditation program allows for that audit, that investigation, auditing, and reporting issued. Okay, now with that line, you've matched it working with former mayor, Dumano Okwe, Dumagos. And there are various other people who are going through the targeted responses with the assessment. And that assessment is overall assessment, including understanding the environment in the municipality. Because sometimes you also have to make sure that it's sustainable. The minute sometimes you remove a municipality, loses senior managers, senior leadership, suddenly it's no longer capacitated. So you need to make sure that there are proper structures down and up to ensure that it is sustainable. I did issue the issue of the demolition of housing, the steps with regard to ratification. Chair, would you provide a report? We will have to agree by when we should provide that report so that, unlike the previous time, after we've provided the lead, the committee will indicate what other aspects it requires. there was a comment about PHP, which is in danger of failure. the PHP program, our understanding evaluation of it has been that where it's been successful, it has provided quality outcomes, good houses. And I'm talking PHP as intended policy. Because I must make this point, and which is what I actually developed this program, is that PHP is based on the rules and learning principle. People doing themselves, not pretending to be doing it. Putting the structures around them, getting people to train them to understand the things and the intricacies of the development, and guiding and mentoring, but not doing for them. Mm-hmm. And that's principle has been missed in a number of the so-called PHP that were meant by providence to avoid difficulties and intricacies they need to deal with the other programs. They develop things they would call developer-driven PHP. What is it? Managed PHP, which is not what the program was about. That's why we had to look at that program, review it, and outlaw those kinds of tendencies and processes. Because at the point where those contractors were managing the so-called PHP program, had the money, ran away without completing the limit. Those people who gave them that thing would then not run to those contractors, run to back to government and say, they moved that. And there were witnesses in allowing that kind of situation, including some of the provinces themselves, which have been taken to task with regard to those, and they are being rectified. Chair, from a philosophical perspective, from a policy perspective, it's a sound program. What we have done, we realize that the institutional arrangements that we had before, where we manage the PHP from policy development and the implementation off to an institution called PHPT, a trust that was set up with funding from overseas, from USAID. And UNTP, which was not enough, we then mainstreamed it. We now have a unit in the department that is guiding. Every province also has been passed, has been instructed, has promoted all of them, special PHP unit in the province to then help participate in the process of dealing with PHP units that are being constructed, which are very few. At the moment, in each of those problems. The biggest problem with these units, given that you are talking about people who have to certain things before they can start constructing, they can't construct at the pace of a contractor. They'll be very slow to develop, and as a result, their numbers are very small compared to the rest of the programs. But I think from a quality perspective, we need to maintain the integrity of that program and keep it as such. So it has suffered those delays because of that. Julie, you will deal with the other issues. Gender focal point. Yeah. I'm a little bit tired. I'll take over after Julie has taken care of them. I think the issue of gender and gender, you, but I think in particular gender, I'm not sure, member, if in the program of the committee you might not want a dedicated professional member or could do that. Or we provide a report of where we are, both in terms of our transversal program with regard to the various steps of implementation of our program, our requirements for women-led construction companies, and then the transformation in the department itself, because you also asked whether the same situation pertains to provinces, etc. It's a comprehensive report that we can give you with regard to that. We do have a focal point in the department, a unit the advancement of that deals with gender, how it is under our transformation so we can't give you, because otherwise we would be doing injustice to start to come up with this kind of part of that. But we also comply with the requirements. We will discuss the time frames because we will need to work out how when we must give you this information. In fact, you indicated that you want a program, honestly. So we have to do if what? Yeah. All of that will be. Yeah. Well, something about engagement with stakeholders in Mpopo with regard to those projects. You will deal with them. Which municipalities have been accredited, we can give you a report of that. Okay. The audit of
With Mpopo, we want to remember the mine.
Oh, and I think she's going to answer specifically that one. I'm not sure, should I respond to the Magaya as Magaya? Okay. I'm just on the chair. Let's come to the 1 billion rand. We are discussing. The honourable member is not here now. The basis for the 1 billion guarantee is based on what is the so-called affordable housing gap. Since we are providing a full solution for people who are earning up to 3,500. Anyone above that is supposed to raise a loan. We will then contribute to reduce that loan. So you construct a house, or you buy the constructed house. A bank using a loan for that amount of the house will reduce that, because if you are earning 4,000, 6% of that is about 4,000. 30%, which is what banks use to assess whether you can afford. Very often find that the installment for the house is far lesser of what is required, and therefore that person will never qualify. In that regard, we then develop what is called finance use individual subsidy program, which is a deposit mechanism for the reduction of the loan that the person will. What seems to have occurred is that we are working with the rest of the developers to establish what the reasons for the gaps, whereby the effort contracts are very high, even after you consider the deposit, they still don't qualify for that. And you are trying to fix that aspect, which is the gap. This guarantee. Now, the reason why then you have that situation is that banks say if you can't meet the affordability qualifications, we don't even start to consider anything, whether you are generally a good player or whatever. But if you don't meet this requirement, we will be acting negligent in terms of the national credit position in lending you and in government. And that's been the issue with regard to that. So, in trying to meet the bank halfway with regard to dealing with this crisis or affordability, so that they can start to, I hear that their communication seems to say they will not relax it. I'm sure that this is part of the discussions we have on what aspects they need to do.
still there is an underlying cap by government.
Our proposal is that this guarantee will then have to develop, we want to develop that guarantee with them, that cover that then during the period when they are at higher risk for not to cover. Once that happens, because it will, if you earn 2,000 in day, it does not mean that you will be earning 2,000 in day as well. So for the time, the situation is
changing. At that point, you may be fully qualifying, lower the risk.
You want to be able to say, why that is the highest, given the highest period, government is giving you the comfort to cover your debt. But then the issue that we are now busy negotiating with them is the extent of that period and some of the initiatives that are there. But in principle, we want to say, at that point where there is high risk, we will come. We have a floor. That's what the minister addresses. We have now given him a floor. There's no hope. There's a floor. He's got rules, but the issue is a floor. And then when the floor is no longer required, because there's ground, then that is the government must release so that it can provide the next person who is in the same position. And that is the approach we are taking with them. I think they probably are preempting intimidation. We have also intimidated them as well by saying those we see are not complying with lending. People will develop a mechanism for holding them to account and punishing. So I think that is what you heard, and that can be what they have been saying, and I think they are preempting those kinds of discussions. It may well be that, because to some extent, they quote NCA, which is an act of parliament, as the reason why they cannot change from what they do. Now, we want to engage with that process, including with the embassy. Because then when institutions where you are providing the floor, we need to then say, surely, the principles in NCA were saying, we do not want you to be reckless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there is a floor, the level of recklessness is not the same as when there was no floor.
Sure.
That's the kind of argument. So we are having those fights. We are not agreeing, but I think there will be a stage at which we agree on some, we'll reach some compromise with them, or else we will then have to pursue our the instruments we have to deal with that, including that legislation that was held in abeyance for dealing with banks who do not invest in the poor area. But Chair, let's leave it. Because I think from government's perspective, we are putting a noble program. It is going to test whether they are committed to the partnership, which they have said they are committed to. It's not easy. Right. It is not easy.
Maybe so
that
we don't come back to you.
Yes.
Nothing to stop now. As members of Parliament,
No, you are not. Because if they have made the statement in the newspaper, they have effectively opened it up for public discussion. That's the risk that you are taking before they deal with it in an internal process, or so in a closed process. And they have opened it up. As members of parliament, we are free to respond to that appropriately. And that will help us. I don't know, that's my view. If they put it in the newspaper, it's in the public domain. You may choose another media for dealing with it that is appropriate for us. But at our level, we will deal with the fact and figure. can I just give myself a bit of a report. So
on. And to do that, I have that report.
Gender question, ma'am, in your, as far as the department is concerned, there's actually a filter that our HR department is very, very concerned about. Every time there's interviews about health, we get a print out of what the quota is for women, disability, etc., and that is adhered to, and we'll be very happy to provide you with that information. We don't have it here with us, but we'll be happy to just to augment that. And I think even at provincial level, these are very important, and we might be able to tell that a number of the heads of departments of the provinces are women, and they're very competent women as well. So I think the gender issues are the.
Yes.
But we'll provide you with whatever with the information, and we need you. We coming back and arriving out of. Today, there are a number of issues that I've been making notes of, and I'm saying that these are the things that we need to address. Chair, the question that the gender balance, the engagements with AngloCat and Limpopo. Chair, I don't have the information with me on hand, but I'll be very happy to get that for you and to be able to provide that. Who the stakeholders are, whether all the parties concerned, whether the communities and have been in agreement, whether they've come together in consultation, all those details I don't have with me. And I'll prefer it if I come back to you with a detailed report on that, if I might. As far as the occupancy audit is concerned, my understanding at the last point was that I think it was KZN and Free State that was still to be audited, and that too we will come back to you. And we believe that the information contained in that occupancy report is really very, very interesting, and it is very important. It's important information, and as soon as that has been, I'm sure we can come back to you with that as well. So the details of that. From the M&E section is something that we need to share with you, but I don't have the details with me here, Chair. I'm sorry about that, but I would rather not give you just frivolous information. I'd rather give you the details. The Action DG has talked about the PHP, the demolished houses. The targets for SONA, we referred to that, but we have met with the provinces already. We've started to align our targets. If you look at what the target is, Chair, for SONA, it is almost 200,000 units per annum. And that is essentially what we are delivering. In this last financial year, in 2019, we delivered 219,000. So we are almost on target for what is expected of us. If we can escalate the delivery, we really must do that. Now, that is as far as the informal settlement is concerned. Over and about that, we need to deliver rental housing at the rate of 20,000 units per annum, and we also need to deliver affordable housing. We are at the moment engaging with the financial sector, and we are trying to ensure that we get the 1 billion rand issues being addressed, as Gigi was talking about. That is in the process of discussions are underway. What we also need to do is develop a policy for that, because we cannot disperse that money in the absence of a policy. So the 1 billion rand, we have to have a programmatic manner in which we disperse that money. And in line with that, the affordable housing sector, houses will be delivered in the affordable housing sector in line with that. Although we do have our FLISP, which is our Finance Linked Individual Subsidy Program at the moment, that will have to be augmented to include the 1 billion rand guarantee fund. And we still in negotiations for that. Chair, the next issue is progress with the FOCO. If the Honourable Member would please just allow me to... submit the details of that one. As far as the transition from Tbilisi to the HDA is concerned, Chair, that this past year has been a lot of the time has been dedicated to ensure that that transition has happened. What we have done is we've had to do reconciliations on the ground for both financial and non-financial information. We have to reconcile with Tbilisi what you are saying on your books, have you delivered that? And in terms of what provinces are saying to us, have you delivered that? And that has been hugely problematic, and in some of the projects we've been able to close it and we've been able to achieve the reconciliation. Some of that, I'm not sure which are the ones that are outstanding, but largely for example, like in the Zanibola project, we've been able to tie up a lot of that, the reconciliation. With the Eastern Cape, some of those have been done, but I think there is still some work that still needs to be done. So that is a process that has been ongoing, and it hasn't been easy to reconcile, and we cannot let an entity like Tbilisi go out into the and go and sleep while we haven't done that reconciliation, and that could be a huge auditor general inquiry, and we need to avoid that. So we would like to do it right, Chair. So that process is still has had to be addressed very, very vigorously.
Just to compare the program. So what you mean that members that they were now they didn't have to complete whatever outstanding work that they were doing so that your work can be handled.
Chair, what I'm saying is that as Tbilisi is closing up, what we needed to do is we needed to establish. Tbilisi is saying, for example, they have delivered, as an example, 10,000 housing units. And in a province. If, for example, they said in the Eastern Cape, for example, we have done 10,000 units. We then go to province and the relevant municipalities and we check with them exactly what it is on your books. How many do you see what Tbilisi has delivered? Payments from Tbilisi, what has Tbilisi paid to contractors? And we ask province, in terms of what you pay, the payments you have made to Tbilisi, does it reconcile? Is this the correct amount? And it's those kinds of nitty-gritty details of every single one of the projects all the way through that we have had to undertake. And that is a process that's really been quite an incisive process, and it's something that we needed to do to ensure that it's, that all the figures for both the financial and the non-financial information come together and those reconciliations are important. So in some of the projects, and for two big projects that HDA has taken over from, or was from Tbilisi, and that would be the Zanibola project in Nelson Mandela Metro, and again, HDA will be the implementing agent as far as those two projects are concerned. And those projects have also required intense and very incisive nitty-gritty drilling to make sure that the information and the handover to HDA or the province, the projects from Tbilisi needed to be handed over to province before anything went over to HDA. So that was quite a process that we needed to undertake. So thank you, Chair. As far as progress with the projects are concerned, I'm wondering, Chair, would it be possible if we can come back to you with a proper presentation on what progress we have made to date? I will be very happy to do that for you. So that will be our next issue that we must do. So we'll provide you with information as far as that. I don't have all the details with me. Rural development, as far as the rural housing loan fund is concerned, does the department know whether the beneficiaries get the funds? What we will do as far as that's going, Chair, the unit that is concerned precisely with the loan fund, we can get them to come back to you, give you the details on that, how the monitoring happens, and all those details on the fund, because it is dealt with by a particular unit in the department, and we don't have all the information with me. That's in all of the DGP.
Chair, if you read the annual reports which they deliver, we hold quarterly evaluation reports with each of the associations. RAF presents the situation. I think a few concerns we had previously, which they are seeking to deal with going forward. Let me make this point again in addition. There's likely going to be a slight focus by RAF in terms of the product they provide.
If you recall, there is a resolution that was made around oral vouchers for housing. It's a new program. They are now working on that issue with our conduit for managing that program. It's reached an advanced stage in developing agreements, the types of instruments and agreements that will be put in place in order to run that program. Now, that instrument will be much sharper than the current process that we are using, because what is happening at the moment, they have all lens to other people. The lens to Lenco, you will see this in some of the towns in the world, Alice, Mtata, etc., etc. Now, in the original program that they had, Ralph largely based in Johannesburg, lens to business. Some of them would have an office in Johannesburg. As to exactly where the loan is, can be very challenging. You have to locate the address and realize that this person is in King Leinster. Now, if in King Leinster, what are the chances that he is in a village? Those intricate. Now, we accepted that to some extent, if it's a rural town, that's fine. So we had to agree with them, because after we went through this interview, we then were able to say, go and audit every 3 years. We get an independent person to assess the extent of the what we call almost like wastage. See, people borrow things saying they are going to build houses. Once that money is in a bank account, it would be extremely bureaucratic to follow this up to your house. They have used agents such as a building material company, like CashBuild, as well for that. So at least you know you bought. This money was used to buy material. A copy of that image goes to the Lenco or the company that is issuing that. And they, from that perspective, they are fairly short as well for construction. But people on the ground are dead. Because a person who borrows from Lenco for that purpose goes to cash and waits for somebody. You want this material. I go and buy for you. I pay for my thing. I give you material. So those kinds of things. I think they went to get about 6% of that. But then you would end up stopping lending to anybody if you were to follow every one of them. What you think of that is to put the necessary rules in the production mechanism. But we believe that if we cut the voucher process, resolved in some years, we will be in a position, much better position, better, got better controls for you to take what happened to that from us. We want it to be better. That's why we have delays, because we wanted extra control and risk to be able to meet between the enemies. But like that, at the moment, they're developing that and then the implementation and that. So that will have in future a changed mandate that focuses on delivering that. And that's our contribution in addition to the other things around rural housing situation. So that people are not forced to be in a rural area. To using the voucher system, they can then build, hire local people to build their house of a shape and size that is appropriate in the rural area, rather than the central area. And maybe that's all that.
Thank you.
Don't answer the one that one side.
Thank you, Chair. Question about slide 51 and 22. Chair, if we look at slide 22, this actually starts talking about the actual spending.
by the provinces, and it talks through the spending in this past financial year. That's exactly what it talks about. And then slide 61, Chair, starts to talk about the actual delivery opportunities. Now, what we say is that, and if we look at the first column, preliminary units delivered in 910, that is actually the number of units that were delivered with the amount of funding that was available in the financial year. So if you look at the first column, which talks about the voted amount, and it talks to 12 billion, that is the amount that was utilized to deliver in the 19 financial year 219,899 units. So that's where the figures come together. The amount of going forward, and we're saying that going into the NGEF or going into 2014, this is what we're expecting on site 61, what the delivery will be. So I just thought I'd clarify that because you wanted to know how do you link that. So that is.
No, sure. I understood.
Oh.
The question was based on, I linked that with your slide 71, where you were talking M&E, the Chinese. Now, where one was saying, if you go to some of these areas, you will find a situation that on record, you have got this house which is complete, paid down. But when you go physically, you would find that this house is actually half built or one built or whatever. And I was saying now, you were saying the medicine to that is through the direct support from business. And I was asking how. But then they said that it would need some more of intervention. Your house has.
Thank you, member. Chair, at the end of the conference, we do have a monitoring and evaluation unit, and that monitoring and evaluation unit is actually actually mirrored in the provincial housing departments as well. So we do have PhD monitoring units. So as far as possible, projects are monitored at project level and at programmatic level within the department. That is what we're supposed to be doing at MNC. As far as the quality of the units are concerned, At every level, we try very hard to ensure, first of all, that the NHBRC comes on board and that the units are signed off by the NHBRC. The province has restrictions that are supposed to sign up, the municipalities also have. We do find ourselves in a position where sometimes it doesn't happen, and which is why we end up with the kind of shoddy workmanship that we are that does come to the court. But where the department does, in association with the provincial housing departments, we actually are able to identify, and there are physical tasks sometimes that do happen. For example, and I'll take the example of one of the big projects, let's take like a water example. What we did do is that we were told by the contractor that you now have 2,000 houses in the ground. And of course, with a national level, we weren't sure whether this was actually true or not. What I did was actually say to our people in the M&E unit, please go down there physically and go and count the units, and that's what they did. That is how they were able to verify that they were in fact 2,000 units as we were told by the contractor. So in instances like that, we're able to verify by physically having that count. We also like to think that as far as provinces are concerned, and with the major projects, this is what we do, because we have dedicated inputs into the bigger project, and we actually say, look, that needs to be counted, it needs to be verified, and before payments are made, provinces have to verify that they are paying, that they are not paying for ghost houses, that they actually pay for houses on the ground. So the responsibility does actually go also at the provincial level, where they need to go and actually do physical counts to ensure that they are delivering what it is that they're saying they are giving to us. Chair, as far as the land claims are concerned, what we're doing is that we're now working very closely with the Department of Land Reform and Rural Development. There is a process that's in terms of a forum that we put together. There's actually a meeting between our DG and the DG of Land Affairs that needs to occur, and these are the kinds of issues that will be discussed at that meeting. As far as the difficulties are concerned, Chair, we'll be very happy to tell you what our difficulties are. There are some difficulties, and there's a number of challenges that we as a department do experience, both at the delivery level, in terms of our own capacity challenges, in terms of how is it that we meet with our mandate, but these are the things that we'd be very happy to come back to you and tell you exactly what it is. Ma'am, as far as your appointment for service delivery, our understanding from the letter that we needed to address certain issues, we'll be very happy to come back with far more information on specific issues that you raise or that you really would like us to address, and we'll go into the kind of detail on each and every one of the issues that you feel that we have not addressed. It was not by design. We actually felt in terms of the chairperson's letter that we had done that, but we will be very happy to comply with what you require. Insofar as the rural summit was concerned, Chair, the question was raised, and there were recommendations, and arising out of that summit, even the rural policy was one of the issues that needed to be to be addressed. So we're stuck. Those recommendations of the summit cannot be set aside, and we'd like to think that that the unit responsible for the rural summit would have actually taken things to their logical conclusion. And again, Chair, we would if there are recommendations that have not been addressed, we will make sure that we go back and say to people that this needs to be done, and please report to the committee as to exactly what is being done so far as the summit is concerned. As far as the linkages with the construction of houses and economic development, how do we position ourselves, Chair? The construction of housing is a very, very labor-intensive process. We align ourselves very closely with the expanded public works program. We ensure that as far as job creation is concerned, it's a very relevant and a crucial part in the process. And we try to ensure that local communities, as far as possible, are utilized in the process of building housing. It is one of the ways in which we try to not only ensure job creation at local level, but also training occurs at that level. So in other words, people come from the community, are brought in, they are trained. NHBRC has a training program, and we ensure that does take place in order to pump some money into the project areas where the projects are undertaken. Insofar as using cooperatives to build housing, Chair, my understanding is that I'm not sure whether we actually do use cooperatives, but it is something that we need to consider. And yes, unless the acting DG can say something else or if he's aware of something more than I am, I'll be happy for that.
This issue of the cooperative government, cooperatives, is back on the table. What we have done is we provide a foreign policy framework that allows any institutional arrangement, an institution of any type to be able to accept. But we have been corresponding with the association of the cooperative government. With regard to specific enabling arrangements that we have to put to our own to help them to ensure that they are situation in the neighborhood. And that discussion is still taking place, but we are meeting with them and of course forward. But we are currently engaging with them specifically as a sector and as a stakeholder to work with them solutions that we can help. Because we accepted that, for example, in the social housing program, there are providers for them, but it would seem that probably they are unable to utilize that, even though it's available to assist them. So I need to be able to understand what are their concerns, and then we can look at tweaking the policy to
assist in making contact with those concerns that I have. I am in discussion with them with regard to those things. And I would think that we will be in a position to work out a solution to some of those things. But from as the policy stands, they are not prevented from engaging for the amendment or even those that are financial, that have the financial muscle, the ability to develop. I think the issue has been that probably they are the manner in which they are organized has not been quite in line with the manner in which the structure of the program. And in that regard, I expect to that we are able to provide appropriate mechanisms without compromising. In the anti-corruption discussion, Chair, the first thing we are doing now, we are improving. We have done a lot of improvements in our government system that is used to support and manage the housing development process. That's one part, because I think the inability for us to see on time things are going wrong. Block, project of block, sometimes going to be started. One of the best protections is if you know and that's one part. The second part, Chair, has been the work that has started to look at strengthening the procurement process, procurement ratio of the housing contract, and also creating limits of items for all that. This is a project. What may have occurred is that post-PM, CSMA implementation, we moved from a very stringent criteria into a number of the exchequer regime, which just prevented people from doing anything. The one that allows these people almost benchmarking on their father. It looks like they were suddenly you have moved to a situation where you are creating tender. Who are abusing the system as well. So even Treasury is concerned about that, and that is what we are working on. The second issue that we have already done from our perspective has been, once we realize out of the report of the SIU that one of the key things we have to clear to clean up in this process is the conduct. We're standardizing the conduct for development so that at least all of them have got the right types of financing. They're enforceable. And then you will only remain with the people who manage it. Because even with the best contract, if it's not managed properly, you're still gonna have problems. But at least if you have rights that are defined in a contract that you can have defended with the pressure that's not open ended, you have an opportunity to do that. So in the contract management side, using the outcome of that evaluation, we are standardizing those contracts. And making sure that they are they do not have loopholes anymore. I think those are the actions among the things we are doing. I think the rest is the awareness that we are doing, the messages that are being issued by Minister Wilbur Yu will tell people who are not going to take such high level, because they will realize that they will be taken care of and they are going as provided.
Chair, as far as Levant Park is concerned, I just want to indicate that the three spheres of government and EFSA are worked together in terms of an agreement that was signed amongst all the parties. EFSA has done some work, and they've actually done a financial, they've done a model in terms of which they have not only dealt with Lerato Park, but they are dealing with, and they've been appointed by Sorplant Municipality a variety of work for the municipality. But what they've done is that they've done a study in terms of which they've looked at the current infrastructure that is available within the municipality. And they have looked at the sanitation, the water waste treatment plant, all of those bulk issues that will start to impact on the municipality currently and going forward. In terms of the study, they have indicated that right now the wastewater plant is inadequate to be able to take the load of a new settlement that's as big as the larger park station. So in other words, if you get another 5,000 households, there's insufficient capacity in terms of the current wastewater work, in terms of the capability of the piping and all of that, and it just cannot. So in other words, it cannot take what's going to require of the infrastructure. Right now, for example, the dam, the Flamingo, that will be polluted and because all the waste will start flowing. And these are big problems that, as far as that, not just in the larger part of the entire area, will have going into the future. The problem is that there just isn't sufficient funding in order to upgrade the current infrastructure, which is aging, and which we're told is just not enough for, there isn't sufficient funding for the infrastructure for the larger park. However, in the meantime, what we've done is that we've started to the area has been designed. So in other words, there is a design in place. So the layout of the settlement has been designed. The roads have started to be cut. So in other words, progress is being made in terms of starting to lay out the design and making sure that we're not going to wait for we just want to start to make sure that some progress is being made. Chief, the difficulty with these projects, and it's not only the Rattle Park, but we found that in some of the major properties, we even found in Duncan Village, for example, it has been problematic. There isn't sufficient infrastructure because the old infrastructure was designed for X number of people who were living and smaller numbers of people who were living in the towns and in the cities at that time. We now have more people coming into the city. The infrastructure is very old in a lot of instances. The infrastructure is just not big enough to cater for the large number of people that are coming into the city. So that is problematic at the level of how is it that we are able to have the bigger settlements within the urban core. We do need funding for the bulk infrastructure, and a lot of the time the mix is just insufficient for us to be able to put in extra infrastructure into some of the cities. And that's not only in the larger project, it also comes in a number of the other projects where we find that it's just insufficient. But as far as that is concerned. And I'll be happy to look at the Premier's speech so that we can actually see what the problems are. And I'm just surprised as to why there was no mention made of the Rattle Park, because as far as the Northern Cape is concerned, that was actually the problem that was identified for ensuring that we start to wipe out the backlog. And I can't see how, with such a big project, and the Rattle Park being the biggest project in the province, that it's been relegated to the back. It doesn't make sense, and I can understand the honourable member's concern. Yes, everything is ready to roll as far as the lodge is concerned, and I'm just a bit concerned, and I'll be very happy to look at the speech so that we can start to wonder what it is that's happening. Contractors. Chair, as far as who the contractors who build the shoddies, that will come out of our investigation. So that is something that, has been dealt with. The establishment of the regulator, is that for Shroud?
Two last questions. The one,
authority is now is being established as we speak to on Thursday, chaired by the portfolio committee chairperson, will be the last session of the selection committee for the board, which then will go to the discussion around one member that could not be recommended or something because it has to be said. Otherwise, the Shrah will be up and running by the end of this month as an entity with the board. We've placed newspaper advertisements helping the board for the chief executive officer, who then would be interviewed by the board. The applications have been received, are in the department. As soon as that board is placed, the board will be given those applications. They will do the selection process and they will appoint the chief executive. We must understand SRA simultaneously socializing foundation because some of the functions currently are being undertaken on an agency basis by the Social Housing Foundation. Some of the functions were originally done by the Social Housing Foundation and the regulator application, that was the major part, are not currently undertaken. And the program that for the development of foundation is managed by the Social Housing Foundation. We continue to be managed by the Social Housing Foundation until it is established. As we said, that we are the promotion. That issue of administration, yes, in the national department in Victoria, public works acts as an agent for finding accommodation for departments. Most times, the building we are using, which they are negotiating to buy, is owned by private sector. The second building we are also but this year they said they are negotiating to buy both of those buildings because we're moving. We're going to extend the department to accommodate accommodated in the adjacent building, which is currently the IEC building, if you know Victoria. We are next to IEC building. So because IEC is moving to Johannesburg in future, we negotiated to get that building and find a way to buy it so that they have human settlement in one complex. So that money is a provision for that rental, although the actual negotiation is done by one of them. They decentralize that process.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Honourable members, before we close, I wanted to comment something. Number one, I wanted to thank you all, the honourable members, that you know there are tendencies sometimes that we do. We ask questions and then we leave. But this thing never happened. And Mr. Jacob is having, Jacobs is having some commitments which we know, and he apologized. But I also emphasize that we must carry on with that spirit. And already it's our lunch time and the food is getting cold upstairs there, but I'm happy because we gave it a priority that the department is responding to each and every comment or question. And also to the department, I'd like to thank you maybe to send this delegation to come and respond to some questions. No matter, I can't give you 100% because there is a still outstanding question that we acknowledge that you are busy doing 1, 2, 3, but where and what is your program, the latest one? How's which you are doing? But I won't open you to respond, we'll get it somewhere. And I'll put an example to the members. Do you still remember where we visited the entities
they show us some of these structures. And I was expected, I'm not harsh with the members, but I was expecting a lot of questions, because before the department comes here, we had an opportunity to visit entities. It means that from our side also we must do some work, because we do have information before they come to us here. It doesn't mean that we don't have information. We visited the entities, they took us to Pretoria and some of their areas, the buildings, etc., etc. We do have information. The information is with us. And by saying that, there was a question also which remained, which you promised, I think you have marked where you committed yourself to bring us answers. And the question which was remained was that by when? What am I going to request from you is that members are going to debate, and that the program of Parliament is very flexible. Why I'm saying that, we know that very well that the human segment we're going to debate it on the 6th. But Parliament is very flexible. It can change at any time, that they bring it closer to the nearest date. But by saying that, I'm requesting you that by tomorrow, as from tomorrow, you must start to receive all those responses and the reports you spoke about, so that the members can start now to prepare themselves. Because my understanding was that you said some of these responses are ready. The only thing that you didn't bring them along with you. But nevertheless, that statement itself is convincing us that everything is there in your hands. The only thing is by when. I'll be very much grateful that by tomorrow we are expecting you, maybe by the end of this week, but particularly from tomorrow, we must have something so that we can circulate among to the members. And again, I think members, we are satisfied by some of these things. And another thing which I'd like to raise with the members, we mustn't be apologetic in terms of accounting. The department is part of accounting officers in terms of the PFMA. They must come and account to us. We mustn't be apologetic in that regard. As I indicated earlier on, that our responsibility, the key, fundamental or key activities and oversight is oversight. That we must oversight the budget, the department, as well as the entities. And also as well as the provinces, because we do have rights to visit provinces as well, whether it's provincial or whatever, in that regard, we do have a proposal to do that. By saying that, I'd like to thank you once more. Thank you very much, all of you. And the lunch, they will give us direction when we go out. I think the meetings are adjourned for the day.
Thank you.